Salutations, sports nerds, and welcome to another Ball Bouncing episode of Inside the Locker right here on oneofus.net. This is the weekly podcast that totally gives a flying wedgie to the idea that geeks and jocks should reside in separate spheres. From the wide, wide world of Warcraft to doing multiple refs at the Gymkata, we've covered all our bases, and no, they don't belong to you. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, three times expelled from three major university Quidditch teams, and I'm joined by JC DeLeon, who has killed more people in death sport than you might expect.
It's true.
And also Elliot Fontanette, who is still banned from Mario Kart Racing for crimes against humanity.
Yeah, but how do you get expelled from Hufflepuff?
It just happens, man. Those people are such snobs. Honestly, I think it was a little racially motivated.
Okay.
I think they hated me because I was white. And a muggle. They kept calling me muggle, which I thought was like a...
That's a bit much.
I'm just saying. It sounded a little hateful.
It's a little offensive.
And sitting in for our neighbor Adam is my brother Blake.
Hello. How's it going?
Who has never done anything wrong as far as our mother knows.
This is true. And that's the way it's going to stay.
Well, gentlemen, welcome to the show. Welcome to Fun Times Galore, which is something I promise you from the bottom of my heart I will never, ever say again.
Is Fun Times Galore like Skate Town USA? Because I hope
so. It really is. And Skate Town USA is a film everybody should watch if you haven't already. That is probably my favorite sports movie.
It was just absurd. It was like, think about the worst effects you can think of.
Yeah.
But put yourself back in the late 70s when disco skating was a thing.
Yeah.
And go.
It still should be a thing.
It really should be. I feel like our culture really started to go downhill when we lost disco skating.
So you're saying Roll Bounce is an aspirational film?
I really think it was going for something, and it was way, way behind its time. But someday, when the cyclical nature of time... time is cyclical, right?
It all comes back around. Timey-wimey, it's a whole thing.
Absolutely. Well, after that riveting discussion, I feel like it's prudent to remind you that this show, just like all of our content on One of Us, is available on iTunes. If you just search One of Us in the podcast section, you can also find the show on Twitter at ITLcast, and you can find the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And if you like the show, if you like what we do here at One of Us Net, we highly, highly recommend you become a subscriber. If you look on the right-hand side there on the sidebar, you'll see there's a link where you can go and sign up for a $1 to $25 monthly donation, or you can just make a one-time donation, whatever you feel is appropriate. And if anything changes, you can always cancel your monthly subscription as well. It's not mandatory at all. We still do most of this content for free, but it is a way that you can help us, you know, keep delivering that content to you, because the great problem that we have right now is we have so many new people coming in every day that the price of running the website keeps going up. And, you know, eventually it's going to get to a point where it's like, well, we're paying for this shit out of our own pockets. And we have mortgaged our houses as much as we can, especially since we rent them. It seemed ill-advised.
And I need my kneecap, so...
yeah, Elliot has taken out a lot of money with the bookies. I didn't even know there were bookies.
I got in deep
in
with
North
the
Austin.
Sharks.
He got in deep with the sharks.
And I want to impress my parents by saying my show has subscribers.
There you go. So help us impress JC's parents, which is really what we're all here for in the first place.
Yeah.
And become a subscriber. Well, before we get into our main topic and our news and whatnot, I want to hear a few cheers from the cheap seats. Which is just me saying that we put a call out for questions and shout-outs and whatever else you wanted to say to us on Twitter, and we're going to read a few of those tweets right now. So, JC, who's out there? Who's in the cheap seats right now?
Scott Smidlin, our resident super knowledgeable football guru, champion of the points champion of the Fantasy League and the ITL Thunder Bowl champion, wants to know what our favorite Super Bowl party food is.
Mm. 1 year, Kayla Cromer came over, and I don't think it was the Super Bowl. Kayla Cromer from Sparkle Fandango over at Rage Select. She came over 1 year, I think it was actually to watch the BCS National Championship. And she brought this dip, and she called it the Super Bowl. And this dip was mostly butterscotch pudding.
Yes.
And it was in this giant edible bowl that was made out of, like, graham crackers and cookies.
Yes.
And then we had these big, like, chocolate cookies that we dipped into the
butterscotch. I remember this, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was the greatest thing ever. And Kayla, there's no reason at all you should be listening to this, but if you are, we've got to figure out how we can even purchase some of that from you, or at least get the recipe from you, because oh my God, it was incredible. What about you guys?
I like a cookie cake. I love cookie cake. So
oh, you mean just like a giant cookie?
Yeah. Well, oh my God, those cakes awesome. That you can buy and like they'll
you
have
mean cookie pizza?
Pretty much. Yeah. Okay, whatever they call it, it is the most amazing thing you could ever put in your mouth.
Yeah.
And Blake would know.
Nope. Nope. Glossing over that one. What about you, JC?
I'm going to go with the dips are always fun. Various, like, seven-layer dips.
Don't you think that after the fifth one, though, the last two were there just for show?
Yeah.
It's a little ostentatious.
After a while, you can't really taste anything. But to give a local Austin restaurant a shout-out for what I like to eat during Super Bowl, Pluckers.
Beat me to it.
Pluckers Boneless Wings, yeah.
Oh, mother.
Exactly Pluckers. What I was going to say, you bastard.
Yeah. So
there's nothing else, Elliot, that you like to?
Well, I was going to get two, but that was one of them.
The Pacific Rim Jaeger cake.
He Jaeger likes
the
shots.
Jaeger shots, yeah.
No, mine is also the Boneless Wings. Baker's Gold are like a spicy barbecue, that toss.
Is that a particular strain of marijuana, Baker's
Gold?
I don't
care. Hey, look, I might be going to Colorado pretty soon. I don't know.
Hey.
And also, and this sounds really random, but Chili's has a really good...
First of all, let me stop you right there. There is nothing you could say at this point that is going to sound random coming from you.
Little aside, you know.
We've learned to expect this from Little Aside, so go ahead with your Chili's food.
Well, like, this is like, if I had a request for like a last meal, this would be a part of it. Chili's has really good classic nachos.
Okay.
Like, they put like some kind of bean queso on top of the chips, and then they put cheese on top of that. With like a jalapeno and some guac, and it's really, really good.
I would have to say you are probably the only person. You'd be the only person on death row to request Chili's as a last meal.
Like, give some goddamn Chili's.
Yeah. You know, I want a chain restaurant.
Put some ketchup on my steak.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have ketchup for my steak?
Waiting.
Before you put the needle in, I really want to juice up with some catsup.
Hey, look, if I know I'm going to die, I might as well not care about clogging my arteries. Fuck it.
Yeah, seriously. I'm going to eat an entire birthday cake. Just like, bring me a whole fucking birthday cake.
If I'm going to get executed, I want them to deal with cleanup. That's all I'm saying.
It'd be like that scene from Seven. I'm just going to keep eating.
You're damn right.
Until, like, that's what's going on. And then when they put the needle... I was going to say when they put me in the electric chair, but then I realized it wasn't 1935.
Yeah.
So when the needle goes in the arm, it's just going to be like a food pinata. It's going to be disgusting.
It's like what's that director who did The Fly?
Cronenberg.
It's going to be like Cronenberg movie.
It's going to be like Scanners. Or it's going to be like Street Trash, where the homeless guy drinks the Viper and then... pops like a giant tick.
Make the executioner earn their money. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. And this has been the Death Row Podcast on oneofus.net. Anyway, see, you were saying. It's weird that Suge Knight isn't here to talk Death Row with us, but anyway. Yeah.
Second question is from Victor Perez on Twitter, at LambdaManVP, who looks like he set up his Twitter account just to follow various One of Us Net personalities.
Awesome. So, thanks, yeah. Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's got 4 followers, so everybody should follow him.
You should all follow him.
Say that name again for us.
Victor Perez at LambdaManVP.
All right. He's a Lambda, too.
I mean, all of that praise aside, I kind of take exception to his question because...
does it insult LeBron?
No, it insults another one of my favorite players.
Oh, God.
He wants to know who has a bigger ego, Richard Sherman or Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson.
I don't remember Allen Iverson.
I do.
Is that bad?
I would say that they are comparable at this point in time, because I don't think anyone really knew who Richard Sherman was, unless you're like a really, you know, in-depth sport or NFL fan.
Yeah.
But I would say that everyone knows Allen Iverson's like ego. However,
well, here's really the deciding question, though. Is Allen Iverson talking trash now? Like, if Allen Iverson came out now and was like, I'm the best basketball player who's not playing.
He might still be saying that, and no one is covering it. Like,
probably not, because he's broke and divorced. But, I mean, the worst thing you can say that he ever did, aside from the practice rant, which is probably what he's most known for, I mean, there was that moment in the finals against the Lakers where he scored a 3 in overtime right over Derek Fisher, and then he, like, pretended to rub the dirt off of his shoes right in Derek Fisher's face.
Oh, my God. What a beast.
This might think of the children.
Yeah, see, I
don't... Won't someone please think of the children?
Yeah, see, that wasn't that bad. So yeah. Richard Sherman's obviously got a bigger ego, and we're going to get into that later.
I do love that practice rant, though. Guys, how am I going to make my teammates better by practicing? Like, that was the funniest thing.
Like, do you know how everything in life works?
Yeah, if the team revolves around you, you can't just keep doing everything by yourself.
Here's my thing about the players that I like.
You turn a blind eye to their staggering personality issues.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, JC, you are human.
You gotta have... wait, who's your other favorite basketball player?
You can't even put LeBron. in the ego discussion, you can't even put LeBron in the
But I will say, really? That makes Allen Iverson, though. That practice, everyone knows about that. And it's why people tuned in to watch him. Because it was just like, I don't know. For me, after a while, at the very end of it, it was like watching a train wreck. You know, like, he would come in and, like, try to be the main guy on the Pistons but couldn't do anything. I mean, for a while there, he was one of the best players in the NBA. Like, without a doubt.
And he knew it.
And he knew it.
And I'll say, here's the difference for me. And we're going to get into Richard Sherman in a second, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. But what I will say is he wrote a follow-up article where he did have the foreknowledge to actually say, you know what? I don't take back what I said, but I can't just put it all on me. The front seven does the job. And I don't know if Allen Iverson ever gave credit to anybody else.
Yeah. And ever. I think, Richard Sherman is pursuing a master's degree in something? Like, going to school.
I think he stayed in school an extra year to finish it. I think he finished it while he was playing football.
I want to say it's public speaking. I want to say that's what his master's
It was communications.
In. Yeah, it's communications, absolutely.
And he went, in fact,
telecommunications.
Yeah, and he graduated from Stanford, but here's the thing. You get Allen Iverson, and just, was it a regular interview that he did that in?
It was a...
Or was it post-game or after the game?
There happened to be reporters at the practice facility.
Okay.
And he just kind of showed up and he was like, hey, I've got something to say.
Okay, so Allen Iverson went out of his way to say it, whereas you get this guy coming straight off the field with a guy he doesn't like in the first damn place.
Yeah.
That he just embarrassed. And he's like all jacked up. He's like... I probably would have said the same damn thing. I'd be like, yeah, don't you test me.
If Sherman doesn't make it in the NFL very much longer, which he's a wrestler, like, no doubt. He just challenged, like, Crabtree to a world title match at WrestleMania. Like, that was...
My favorite thing was that the way he just said, and that sorry receiver. And he was like, I don't care who Crabtree is.
All right, listen up, gun jumpers. We're going to get to
sorry,
that.
Sorry,
but it was funny.
Okay, one thing before that. Did y'all see the GIF that was posted since we brought up LeBron? There was a GIF posted. The Miami Heat were at the White House today.
Yes, with Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama, oh, Duncan.
Duncan on.
And she goes, oh, it's hilarious.
I wanted to see Barack come out and, like, slap a shot out of D-Wade's hands.
No,
you're not going to score on my house. I put a court in the backyard. Go fuck yourself. You don't like it.
That's what you call a filibuster.
That's a filibuster. Now I'm going to bust your face. I'm Allen Iverson.
So, I mean, y'all should look that up if y'all get a chance. It was the funniest thing I've seen this year.
Well, thanks a lot for tweeting at us, guys. We'll get some more shout-outs and questions and general cheers from the cheap seats in future episodes. But for now, I think we need to go ahead and move into our news segment. And, of course, we got to start by talking about the two... conference championship games in the NFL. That's right. The two teams going to the Super Bowl have been determined. It is the... Wait for it for the people who didn't follow the games because they don't give a shit about sports. It's the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. The Broncos defeating the Patriots 26-16 and the Seahawks defeating the 49ers. Hassan Pfeffer because I don't have the score right in front of me. But the point is they won. Yeah. So there's that.
And if you don't follow sports... But you're going to a Super Bowl party in a few weeks. Listen to this part because this will make it seem like you do watch sports when you can actually talk to your friends about it.
Yeah, that's why we're here.
The score was 23-17 Seahawks, I believe.
23-17 Seahawks. So, yeah, just listen to this podcast. And what we're doing is we are equipping you with the knowledge that you need to go into that party and sound like a motherfucking pro.
Mm-hmm. Like, damn, it feels good to be a sports fan.
It does feel good to be a sports fan. It definitely does. But, I mean, there's a lot of story. I mean, like, you'd think, okay, well, the season has largely come to a close except for the big game. But there's a lot of storylines now even for these two teams and even from these conference games, one of which being Peyton Manning is now on pace to become the first quarterback to win Super Bowls with two different franchises.
Really?
There have been a few other quarterbacks that have gone to Super Bowls with multiple teams, but he will be the first, if he wins, he'll be the first quarterback to win Super Bowls with multiple teams.
The only one I can think of right now is, did Montana go to Super Bowl with Kansas City? I don't think he did.
No, he never did. I was going to say, surely there's got to be one.
But again, it's not...
Don't call me Shirley.
Yeah. It's not that he's the first to go to a Super Bowl.
Right, he's going
to
have to win it.
If he wins, then he'll be the first to win
the Super Bowl. Yeah, I'm trying to rack in my brain. I was like, there's got to be one, but nope,
unless this particular stat doesn't take into account like backup quarterbacks who may have been on the roster.
It shouldn't.
Yeah. And I agree, it shouldn't. But I mean, that may be the only.
Yeah, because any backup quarterback would have only won one.
Oh, that was my favorite part, by the way, of ESPN's reporting today. Is they brought on Mark Brunell to talk about what it's like to go to a Super Bowl. when he went to a Super Bowl, he was the backup quarterback to Drew Brees in New Orleans. And he was like, oh, it was crazy. And we did this and we did that. And when we won, I was like, I'm going to stop you right there.
you say we?
If I'm not allowed to say we because, you know, it's just a team that I like and I'm not actually a part of it. If you're not on the field actually contributing to the victory, I'm not sure you get to say when we won the Super Bowl.
If the team would have lost if you played...
I can't say. This will be an interesting Super Bowl, too, because in no means does anyone have this in the bag, especially Peyton, because not only is it against the Seahawks, who has the number one defense in the league, it is in New York, which is going to be very cold and probably snowy. So,
So what you need to know is that the Super Bowl will be played at MetLife Stadium, which, according to recent weather reports, is somewhere on Hoth.
Yeah, it is not going to be that.
You will need to get there by Tauntaun, and then you will need to cut that bitch open and wear it like a coat. Because it is going to be sub-freezing out there.
It's in the middle of a polar vortex, which is totally a real thing and not made up by the weather media.
Yeah, and you better hope Chris Christie doesn't like shut down a bridge or something while you're trying to get up there.
Right. And by the way, polar vortex sounds like a Sci-Fi Channel movie.
It really does.
Like, the Weather Channel should team up with the Sci-Fi Channel and just start making movies together. That's the Sci-Fi Channel's new thing, is they've mixed all the animals with sharks that they can, so now they're just mixing sharks with... weather phenomenon.
Well, it feels like God was watching Day After Tomorrow a few years ago. He's like, shit, I can do that? Fuck yeah.
Wait, you mean to say that global warming can chase a guy down a hallway?
And, like, stop at a door?
That's incredible. But, yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that I really found funny was that, you know, going into the AFC Championship game, every pundit was pointing out the fact that Peyton Manning and Tom Brady have a long history of meeting in the playoffs, and that Peyton's track record against Brady is not great. But they also failed to realize that, first of all, Peyton is not going to Foxborough to play the Patriots. The Patriots are coming into Denver. And not only that, but Denver's lineup, I hate to say it, is a lot stronger than any of the ones he ever had with the Colts.
Yeah.
Like, even in the days of Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, and Dallas Clark, like, that was a hell of a you know, 1-2-3 punch receiving-wise. We didn't always have the best defense. I mean, Denver has the whole package in so many different ways. So I just found it funny. Like, okay, so immediately, even though he's, you know, set this record and he's kicking ass with this team, there's still this perception that as soon as Tom Brady enters the building, like, he's going to go completely cold.
Well, they mention about facts, and they always say, like, well, you know, Peyton's like, I think now he's like 10-11 in the postseason, so he's like under 500, or he might just be at 500 with that win. Yeah. But I feel like with Brady, since they last won their Super Bowl, he has just an equally bad record in the playoffs as Peyton did. So there is a lot of, like, I guess they kind of blow over that. Like, you know, Brady has not been as successful as he used to be. And it's mainly because of this. Teams win Super Bowls, not an individual player. There is no way that any NFL player can win a Super Bowl on his own. It's not happening. And when Peyton Manning went to the Super Bowl and won it with the Colts, he wasn't even like the main reason why they won. It was the running game and the defense is what won that game.
And I tell you, when he lost against the Saints, the only reason he lost was because they kept him off the field.
Right, yeah.
They just ran the ball enough to where he couldn't get... They did an onside kick just to keep his ass off the field.
Exactly.
But if I can express my bias here a little bit, the Patriots not making it to another Super Bowl is like the Lannisters finally getting some kind of comeuppance to me. and to the Patriots' credit, they've been much better about ensuring that evil is punished than has George R.R. Martin. So I appreciate... The Patriots, look, I appreciate so much you guys folding when the game is really on the line.
I was about to say, I was like, whatever he says, he's lying.
No, I appreciate that because it makes me feel like there is still good in the world and that, you know, things tend to work out the way they should. You cheating fucking bastards.
I feel like if you had a chance to hug Bill Belichick, you would pull out your knife and be like, Peyton Manning sends his regards.
I would. And speaking of that motherfucker, Bill Belichick, yeah, I know, I'm biased. I don't give a shit. You know what? This is my show.
You know, you can
I
be
can say whatever the fuck I want.
Look, you can be biased, and then you can also say the sky is fucking blue. I'm just saying, like,
yeah, that's true.
There's a fact. Is a fact.
I'm a sports fan. I didn't go to school for sports journalism and learn how to be, you know, impartial.
A lot of those sports journalists, they just say shit that they know is not true to gin up discussion to get more viewers.
This is, you know what? You know, now that I say that, I have seen a lot of sports journalists who are anything but impartial. So, exactly. And a lot of the time, it has to do with kissing Belichick's ass, despite the fact, you know, despite the things he's done in the past that proves he's a scumbag.
And if you have the gall to point it out, people get pissed at you.
Yeah, yeah. Like so let's think about this. So Belichick's recent his most recent shenanigans. So he called Wes Welker's block on one of their defenders, Talib.
Aqib Talib.
So yes, it was an unfortunate situation where the block led to an injury and Talib had to be taken out of the game.
It's called a rub play. It's where a receiver picks the defending opponent. So as the other receiver who's getting the ball, it's like basically like a pick play in basketball.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's totally fucking legal. And the thing is, Belichick says, during the post-game interview, because he's always a gracious loser, he says during the post-game interview that this hit on Talib was one of the worst he had ever seen.
Bullshit, Mr. Handman.
Yeah, it wasn't just a dirty play. It was the worst play he'd ever seen. And he didn't even name Wes Welker. He said the receiver.
Wasn't Welker a Patriot?
Okay, yes. That's the thing. It's like, right. I'm sorry. The guy who played for you and won you a lot of games, you don't even have the fucking respect to mention him by name.
And let's break it down even further.
You fucking scumbag.
Wes Welker. So you're saying that the Broncos intentionally put Wes Welker on Aqib Talib to get him out of the game. Okay, Wes Welker has had, like, I don't know, 3 concussions in the past 2 years. He's also, like, 5'9".
That's the thing that really bugged me about it, is, like, you're really accusing the 5'2" pass-catching leprechaun of being the bully, being the bully on the field? Well, you gotta be kidding me.
Belichick would know. He probably taught him the technique if he did it.
Exactly. Yeah. And not only that, but here is the part that nobody seems to be mentioning, is that a fucking Patriots receiver ran the exact same play during that exact same game. And not only that, Edelman's a bigger dude.
And it was against Rodgers Cromartie.
And he left his feet, which is the illegal part, which is the thing you're not supposed to do. So, you know what? It's like Bill Belichick picks up the phone and says, "Hey, Pop, it's Kittle, you're black." And then hangs up right in the middle of the post-game interview.
It's a red play, like Blake said. It's something every team in the NFL does. Making it deliberate is illegal. It's the reason why shallow cross routes exist. A quarterback's never going to throw to a shallow cross route. And but it's there to free up a tight end or free up a slot receiver.
And you know Belichick is in the wrong when even ESPN, and they literally said it this way, when they said he's whining about it.
Wow.
When ESPN says Belichick is whining about something, ESPN, which for the longest time couldn't wait to get on its knees for the Patriots, when they say he's whining, that's something.
It's like the little Muppet that sits on Jabba being like, no, wait a second, Jabba.
Oh, yeah.
I think something's wrong here.
ESPN was the salacious crumb of the Patriots. Yeah. They were just like,
on Mike and Mike, which is one of my favorite shows on ESPN in the morning.
And Mike and Ike, my favorite candy.
Indeed.
It is very good. They had this intern go and watch, I think it was like 120 minutes of post-game press conference with Belichick. And they said that they counted. He smiled 7 times out of this entire year. Every game that he won, lost, he only smiled 7 times. So Belichick does not like post-game press conferences. And in fact, he comes off as an asshole. Because like any time that he loses, it's like any question that you ever pose to him is a stupid question. So he doesn't even want to be there.
I really hope that that guy whose task it was to do that is super proud of his journalism degree.
Yeah.
Like all the money he spent in college to get to a point where someone actually paid him to watch post-game footage to see when Belichick smiles.
Well, look, at least he's
Jesus
working.
Jesus Christ. I mean, I've had shit jobs. Don't get me wrong. I've had to write shit articles about things I couldn't care less about. But good God, is that an undertaking for pointlessness?
It's one of those things where I'm like, are you bored, ESPN? There was one at one point this week, LeBron wished Dwayne Wade a happy birthday on his Instagram account.
ESPN, I'm gonna tell you this one more time.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up about what athletes are doing on social media.
Yeah.
Don't care. Nobody cares. It's never gonna be a thing.
At one point in this long message, LeBron says, "No matter what happens in the future, we're always gonna be brothers." And ESPN ran with that to say, "Oh, LeBron might leave Miami because he doesn't know what's gonna happen in the future."
I can't criticize them for that because the only entity that does that more is movie news sites.
Yeah,
what do you
that's
mean?
The
we said
shirt.
This in this interview exactly this way. I was like, oh fuck. And you know what? I'm not excusing myself from that. I've had to write articles that have been assigned to me. It's like, ooh, he said this in an interview, so it clearly means this, and we're just like, really?
Well, it was assigned to you. Somebody at ESPN was like, "Oh, hey, LeBron said this, and it might mean this."
It might mean slow news day.
I think what you're talking about is different from that, because that's just making shit up. Where like it's making something out of nothing at all. Whereas like you know, BuzzFeed gets a lot of shit for the list, and, you know, people get shit for saying, click here to find out. But you know what? You got to drive. You got to drive traffic.
Yeah, but there's movie sites, and this is not me coming down on people. It's just it's part of the business, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Where you go through and you do things exactly like what ESPN did, where it's like he said this in an interview. What was the meaning of this particular phrasing? And it's like maybe he's fucking tired because he did 30 interviews in a row.
Yeah,
and just didn't like when you're actually there. That's the thing that they always leave out of these interviews is that when you're actually there, it's such a cattle call that. These guys are sitting in a room. Usually it's like a conference room at a hotel, and they're just sitting there while they bring in person after person after person asking the same fucking questions over and over and over and over and over again, and they're expected to kind of be cheerful and represent the movie well. Yeah. Eventually they're just going to get tired, and they're just going to not think about what they're saying, but that 30th guy is going to be the one that's like, oh, but he said it this way. So, why did he say it this way? What did he mean? It's like, he didn't mean anything.
So why did y'all have why did y'all get like a really nice interview with Filion and Clark Gregg? And
because we weren't looking for scoops. Okay. I mean, we were just, I mean, and I'm not, again, let's not us, that's not me patting us on the back. We went in there so nerded up, like, oh my God, we get to talk to these guys. We didn't give a shit about getting scoops. Okay. We were just like, holy God, we get to talk to them. Oh my God, oh God.
He's like, I think Chris still has that on his Facebook page as like his profile picture.
Dude, it's
which
it's
awesome. I'm not begrudging the man. Like, that'd be my profile picture. That'd be my funeral stone. It'd be my headstone. Be like, what? I've met him.
And speaking of freaking the geek out, can we talk about Richard Sherman for a second? Richard Sherman, if you're not familiar with this guy, he is apparently the greatest cornerback to ever play the game, or so he says.
I'm the best corner in the game!
Richard Sherman is, you know, in all fairness, a great corner.
He has 20 interceptions in the past 3 years.
He's a shutdown corner, if that term ever meant anything.
Yes.
And Bailey.
And well, Champ Bailey as well, but he had such an amazing game that he literally is responsible for breaking up the pass that would have won the game for San Francisco. Yes, obviously he had a huge impact in the game. Right after that happened, there was only a few seconds left on the clock. All Seahawks had to do really was take a knee and end the game. There was an exchange between him and receiver Michael Crabtree. Didn't go the way that I guess Sherman thought it was going to go. It didn't end well. And what happened was during the post game interview, it was who was it that it was interviewing him?
Aaron Andrews.
Aaron Andrews had the great misfortune of going up to Richard Sherman as he is hyped all to hell.
Yeah.
And delivers. I mean, the only way I can describe it is it was like watching Denzel's Training Day tirade spoken by a predator. It was insane. It was like he was cutting a promo for WWE, and I can't, don't get me wrong, I can't wait to see his match against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, but he just went off about like, I'm the greatest corner in the game, you give me his,
when you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Aaron Andrews literally said, who was talking about? And she had clearly like lost the thread of doing an actual interview, because the way it came out would be the way one of us would talk to one of our crazy drunk friends. She said it like,
who was talking about you?
What the fuck are you saying?
I have been in that conversation before.
And it was like, I literally had gone to another room once the game ended, and I heard this, and I came running back in like, what the fuck is happening? And sure enough, he had just lost his mind, and I guess it was the adrenaline and this weird exchange, and it just ended up with him calling out again. Like, I've just never seen a player call out another player in a post game, you know, apart from Belichick being a dick, like on the field, like literally, like, I'm better than you, I've taken what's your blah blah. Like, it literally sounded like a WWE promo.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, of course, is, what the fuck? Like, I mean, is this the kind of thing we should be like, this is hubris, or...
I assume something happened on the field where Crabtree had said something so bad to Sherman. I mean, I know Sherman is a trash talker.
He absolutely is a trash talker.
He's got, and the San Francisco-Seattle's a huge rivalry, especially since now that they're both equally as good. Mm-hmm. I mean, and honestly, I don't even think Crabtree is the point of discussion here. I'm wondering why Kaepernick even threw the ball when they had 30 seconds left and it was like first down.
That was my thing. We were in the room and I was like, they've got time. They don't need to, and it's intercepted.
Yeah, it's like, why would they go for a fade route in the corner of the end zone?
Well, yeah, because the entire game, all they had was Kaepernick running.
Yeah, and it's just like, get closer and then run the ball in. I mean, that's what you're beating them on. But, I mean, Sherman obviously took some kind of offense or just was so hyped up where he went for that handshake. I don't know what he was doing. He might have been offering, you know, the olive branch, or he might have been trying to show him up, you know, in the middle of his end zone and in front of the fans, saying, you know, I got the best of you, you know, like.
I can't tell you what it is exactly. I'm not a huge Seahawks fan, And one of my big pet peeves is that kind of egoism in sports, because it just drives me – it keeps me at arm's length from that player. It keeps me from liking them. But something about Richard Sherman just owning it and being like, yeah, I'm a trash talker. It's part of my game. You know, and he's very aware of it, but at the same time, he works his ass off and makes sure that he's backing it up. I don't know. I can't really describe to you what it is, because it has nothing to do with me being a fan. I don't care about the Seahawks, whatever. They can do whatever they want. I will give them all the credit in the world for their secondary, because it is the best secondary in the NFL. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, well, the Cardinals are great too, but the Seahawks are absolutely the best secondary. Yeah. But it's something about Sherman where I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I don't know why. And, you know, that could be a personality flaw on my part. But
what I really think is funny is that he has cemented himself from that post-game interview. It's like, who besides...
That's all anybody's talking about.
Like, who knew Sherman before this? And, I mean, he was a good player, and obviously he was actually one of the best. And I didn't know him. I didn't... I mean, I knew that
sort of knew who he was.
Yeah, like, I knew Earl Thomas, you know, on the Seahawks. You know, I didn't really know much about Sherman. I knew that, you know, he was one of those guys with, like, the long hair.
Well,
you know?
I knew him because there were other incidents where he was kind of being... Let's say
he's built this reputation for himself.
Competitively loquacious is the way I will put it. And, you know, so he's done this all throughout the season, so I kind of knew who he was from that. So by all rights, the way he's acted, I should, like, have a real distaste for him, but something about the way he owns up to it.
I commend him for backing up his trash talking. He did. He was dominant that entire game. I think Crabtree only had like 4 receptions for like 53 yards, which in a title game really doesn't, you know, didn't amount to anything. He didn't give up a huge play that, you know. So, I mean, obviously, like, he's got skills, and I feel like he's probably going to be now one of the best paid center backs in the league.
And I think maybe that's another part of the reason that I don't write him off, is it's like part of it is that he's just trying to cement his place on that team and get the contract that he thinks he deserves, which clearly he does. And I guess he thinks that part of kind of standing out is being, you know, being the loudest and being the person that's in the spotlight. Now, of course, the question becomes, is that a negative spotlight? Is that something that, you know, we should be waving our finger in his face? Or is it something, you know, I don't know. It's a tough question, obviously. But
yeah, I mean, my thing with it is, I mean, it's fine. If he's able to back up the talk right now, that's one thing. My reaction was like, well, now I want this guy to never win a Super Bowl ever.
Yeah.
But, see, mine was the opposite.
Well, he did another interview post-game a few minutes later where he said pretty much the same thing. So he had no remorse. It wasn't just an in-the-moment thing. Like, that was his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what he did off the field, I don't really like. I didn't like that. I understood, you know, he backed up the play and everything like that. But my thing with players who have this kind of ego, at some point, they're going to get theirs.
They're going to be under the microscope.
He's his second
so
year. It's
much.
Not, you know, towards the end of his career, if Jordan wanted to talk crap, he could.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the thing with cornerbacks, the thing with receivers, that skill erodes very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, he's going to be the same trash talking corner 8 years from now, and he's going to be getting burned left and right.
No, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Just real quick. You can say that, but he doesn't get to the place he is if he's worried about one day not being able to back up his trash talk. Like, that's just a part of – I don't think he could have – there's a phrase that Martin used a while back that I'm gonna borrow. I don't think he could have survived and got to that level without that chaos engine that fueled him to there. Like, I want him to win a Super Bowl more than ever because I love it when somebody says something that – you know what? I don't think it warrants any disapproval. And he said on his article he wrote – What I tend to do is I go, I apologize for my tone, but that content, I believe that content. And if he said, you know, Crabtree's a garbage receiver, and I shut him down.
Well, it's just if you make yourself be the villain in a lot of people's eyes, that's a heavy burden to bear.
But my thing is, indeed. Why is he the villain? Yeah. He didn't curse Crabtree out.
He didn't.
Well, no, he didn't.
He didn't curse him out.
He used curse words, but he singled him out.
Well, you can single him out, but I'm saying he didn't use any curse words on TV. He said he's a garbage receiver, but
across as crazy and just insane.
It's the calling out of a player. That's
call
something,
him out all day.
That's something that players don't do.
But But that's the thing is that JC's right. That's something that you don't do. Like in post game, and like if you get like well, okay. So the difference between like what Belichick did and what Richard Sherman did. Belichick waited until the post game interview and then just very dry.
Did not name Wilker.
Well, I mean, yeah,
he said the receiver. So like there's a way of handling it that usually, and I'm saying that I don't think it's wrong because I like a good story, and Sherman is now going to be the story of the Super Bowl and in the weeks leading up to it. And he put himself underneath the microscope, so you better damn be sure that if he's going to perform, he better perform in the Super Bowl, because if he sucks, he's going to be the laughing stock of the NFL.
Yeah, and to be completely clear, I'm not saying that what Belichick did was right, because the thing that Belichick is asserting is absolutely wrong, but I am saying that is how even the most, like, if you look at what Belichick said, it was directed at a player. It was completely out of term, and it was, but still, it was done in such a way that there was sort of a modicum of, I don't know, procedure or whatever. Whereas Sherman, literally, like, when someone interviews you after you've just won your conference championship, there's elation. There's a lot of emotion, obviously, but you usually just say things like, "I'm so happy. We worked all year for this." Blah 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 blah. Sometimes you say something like, "We were playing a great team," and show a little deference. Or sometimes you don't.
They go through training to make sure they don't say stupid things.
But what you don't do is you don't say, "I was up at," like, literally, we have never heard anything like this. Like, Muhammad Ali is like the last time we've heard an athlete like.
I love Muhammad Ali. That's why I love what he said, because, like, I listen to Muhammad Ali when I work out. Like, he had this one part. He's like, "Yeah, just last week I injured a stone, and I murdered a rock."
At 24 years old, Richard Sherman is not Muhammad Ali.
No, yeah, shit, I know that. But what I'm saying is like, I don't fault him for this enthusiasm. Like, he called out Krejci because Krejci, who he's played against all day, and on top of that, they had a prior dispute that he shut his mouth.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like, you know what? If you're big enough to toss me in the field, I'm going to put your shit out on Front Street.
Well, the analogy that I was getting at was, you don't want to make yourself the villain in people's eyes, because that's a heavy burden to bear. Look at LeBron's first year in Miami.
Yeah,
everybody hated him, and that year he didn't play very good. He hated basketball the year. The second year he kind of let that go, and he had more fun. And hey, they won a championship.
And Richard Sherman has the benefit of playing in a stadium that has some of the loudest fans,
you can
and that's
talk
great.
About Pacific Rim, I can talk about LeBron.
Oh, I can talk about LeBron too. Let's go. Here's the difference. Did Richard Sherman get with ESPN and organize an hour special and draw out his criticism?
You can argue
that
that's exactly what he's doing right now. You can argue that the media circus that he's drawn attention to himself, not only with that one post-game interview, but in all the subsequent things, and even in that article, which, by the way, was bullshit. I read that article where he said things like, judge people for what they do off the field. I'm like, you know what also counts as off the field? Post-game interviews. I'm sorry, like, he did one on the field, and then he did one in a press room where he said the exact same thing. So if he wants people to judge him by what he does off the field, and he wants to try and make that excuse that that's just how I play on the field, I'm a different person off, but then he does the same thing when he's off the field?
Well, see, I took the article from a different thing. Like, I took it that he wasn't apologizing. I don't think he has anything to apologize for.
He wasn't apologizing, but he was excusing himself by saying...
I don't think he needs to.
Okay, but that's what he did in the article, is he said, "I am this way on the field, I'm not that person off the field, judge me by what I do off the field," and then he did that off the field. It's like, by your own statement, we should be judging you probably
talking about the game, they're talking about him now.
Here's the thing. This argument is going to be settled in 2 weeks during Super Bowl. If he comes up with a big play in the Super Bowl, he's going to have backed this up, and if he doesn't, then he's gonna be a laughingstock, like JC said.
I'll take your side on this in a sense of, like, for me, if he didn't do this, he'll just be another cornerback.
Exactly.
But in a way that he is putting himself under the microscope, and I do feel like there will be a point in time where, like, as an athlete, that is just a bad idea, because if you do not win every year and consistently play your game, you're going to be viewed as, like, a laughingstock. However, if that's what he wants to do, and that's how he wants to make his career, and he can back it up, that's great, because then everyone's going to expect him to make these crazy, you know, allegations against every receiver he's going to play against. But I really feel like, in this particular case, he hates Crabtree, because, I mean, I saw like, previous game footage against the Seattle-San Francisco game, like, during the regular season, and they were just going back and forth. Now, he does that with every receiver, but Jesus, like, they were
great. With the exception of maybe Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, they were talking about the ESPN.
Who is so nice to him, he doesn't know how to trash talk him.
Yeah, like, Larry Fitzgerald said a trash talk and was like, "Man, you had a great game last week. Like, this is during the game." And Sherman's like, he basically flipped the switch on Sherman, where he's like, "You can't say that to me. Like, you can't tell me how good I am. I tell you how good I am."
This is,
like,
not how this shit works.
I want to say a couple things. First of all, I think if we're going to make the analogy between LeBron James and Richard Sherman, and the problem that we have with LeBron is that he selfishly designed a media circus around him instead of focusing on the team element of his sport, that's kind of exactly what Richard Sherman did. Now, ESPN didn't sponsor it. They didn't give him an hour, but they sure as shit are giving him pretty much all the attention because of what he did. And this whole, like, you know, and I understand being passionate. I understand that he's a great player, and I understand that part of what makes him a great player is his ability to get into the receiver's head. But I do think that JC's right in that if you're not careful, you could end up like, let's talk about some of the other, like, let's go to the other side of the ball and talk about some of the, like, major trash talking receivers and how their careers ended up. Terrell Owens, Chad Ochocinco, and Randy Moss. But where are those guys now?
See, okay, well, for Randy Moss, I feel like that's different. The dude, like, had a pretty successful career besides the Super Bowl, like, loss. I feel like having how many touchdowns he had that year, he broke the record. That's a pretty big thing.
But look at how his career ended. He bounced around from team to team.
He ran himself out of towns. But I just feel like with Sherman, I don't think that he's trying to run himself out of town or anything like that. I feel like this is now his time. And if he fails, he's going to just be like another laughingstock. He's going to be like another T.O., you know, like, you know, protecting my quarterback and all that crap. You know, like there's just... But I love these moments where, like, you just have no idea what someone is going to say.
And that's fine. And actually, I think that might be another reason why I tend to give Richard Sherman a pass, is because he's doing it this year where I felt that the NFL has gone out of its way to make the game as boring as possible.
It's been so damn vanilla.
Maybe I'm willing to put up with his shit because it's at least an entertaining aspect of the game. And I'm sorry, if you're borrowing from World Wrestling Entertainment, then there's the key word.
I
want to
see him fight about, like, other topics, like, you know, gay marriage or something like that, you know? Like,
him and Chris Cluey can just go around and Richard Sherman can yell at bigots.
Yeah, like, that would be...
Don't you talk to me about gays not being able to marry! Don't you fucking talk to me about
that! I'm sorry.
I think my thing is, I think the reason I'm really not getting on him is, like, it didn't seem remotely scripted.
No, it didn't.
It obviously wasn't scripted.
It just seemed like he was like,
He said things that didn't make any fucking sense. Guy, it's obvious it wasn't scripted.
I beat him and I'm happy.
Basically, it felt like he didn't take his helmet off. Like, he was after the game, but it looked like he was still, like, going on, like, he was getting, like, lining up against Crabtree still.
You watch that video of immediately after that play, when he goes up to Crabtree, and, you know, Blake and I disagree about this, but as I watch the video, what I'm seeing is a guy who, even as he's his most jacked up, and even with all his ego, Richard Sherman did try to shake Crabtree's hand. My assertion is he went up to him and was seeing how completely dejected Crabtree was and was like, hey, man, and then stuck his hand out like, hey, this was a good game. And Crabtree proceeded to grab him by the face mask and shove him.
Okay,
and I'll give you that Sherman was trash-talking him the whole game and he probably wasn't in a buddy-buddy place. That's fine, but you can't have the double standard of then saying that Sherman has no class. If, as he's trying to shake the guy's hand, Crabtree's like, go fuck yourself.
Let me ask you this. Okay, me and you are in a situation where you're a receiver and I'm a corner or a defensive back.
This is clearly reality, sure.
Right, okay. It's the last game, it's the last play of the, you know, conference championship. You've worked your team is depending on you, it's on the line, and the quarterback throws the ball, I did the exact same thing, you are mad at me, or you are just mad at yourself, you are just in a depressive mood, you're trying to walk off the field, and Sherman is making a moment out of the end zone where all the fans and everyone is watching, and you're trying to shake someone's hand, which is done after the game.
I love that you're trying to vilify the act of shaking someone's hand,
because
he's trying to shake the guy's hand and be like, good game.
Well, I think the bottom line is we're not going to know.
We're not going to know what was said, but for fuck's sake, like, can I get a memo on when I can and can't shake someone's hand?
All the sporting events where that has happened to me. There's things when, like, people show me up and then try to shake my hand. Yeah. It's just like, I don't want to shake your hand right now. Like, I am pissed off that I lost.
That's fine, but you don't have to shove their face either. And that's the difference. And then because of that, because you react that way, the other person is seen as the villain. That's the double standard I don't understand. Crabtree didn't have to shake his hand. Fine. Whatever. But then to shove him completely by the face mask and then Sherman is depicted as the villain in that scenario?
Sherman got a penalty for that, too.
That's horseshit. That's absolute horseshit.
Go ahead, sir.
I'm just saying, for me, it felt like he was instigating. And it's good to... It's fine to... I'll, you know, agree to disagree. But I just feel like, for me, Sherman was still in the trash-talking thing. But obviously, we know he's a trash-talker. And this is another part of his game where he's like, yeah, I'll shake my hand. I just kicked your ass. Like, I don't know. Like, for me, I wouldn't shake his hand either. Like, you know what? Fine.
That's fine. I don't have any problem with Crabtree not shaking his hand. Whatever. But to react the way that Crabtree did, and then everybody focuses on that moment and says that Sherman was instigating this or causing a problem, even getting a penalty for it, it's like, I'm sorry. Fucking ridiculous.
Well, that's where his reputation precedes him.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's going back to what you said, JC, is eventually this kind of shit is going to bite him in the ass.
The thing is, JC, I think you are right. Eventually it will. But I think, like, T.O., I was a casual NFL follower when T.O. really got his reputation. The same thing for Ochocinco. And I just, until he reaches that market penetration point where he is just such a outspoken guy that, like, he is a villain, and I get what you're saying, but you have really good advice for him. But so I do agree with that, but I think it was just an outburst. He was emotional. But one thing I want to say, just from a personal standpoint, there was a sort of a racial dimension after this happened on Twitter.
Really?
Oh, Jesus. And, okay, let me stop here. Twitter, there is always a racial dimension to everything. Yeah.
And all I want to say is, anybody, if there's a fan who's listening to this who was like, who viewed it, who like tweeted something racist against Sherman, please feel free to not listen to this show anymore.
Yeah, please feel free to jump up your
own
ass
and die.
Are you talking
about the thug thing?
Is that well, no, they, no. They should have called him the N-word.
People call him N-word and gorilla. And
I'm sorry, but this is the NFL. Like, trash talking is allowed. It's all a part of the game.
For the record, I only made the Predator reference because of his awesome dreadlocks.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't
know if
I want to make sure that that's clear.
No,
also,
just,
there's a really
I've made the joke all season that he looks like Dougie Doug from Class Act.
No, it's just, and I just wanted to say, especially because like, I was reading that yesterday and I was
it's
like,
it's awful, man.
This shouldn't upset me as much as it does.
No,
it
should
does.
Upset you. It upsets me when I like I see like a thing on Facebook or maybe it was Twitter where the president tweeted, you know, today's National Popcorn Day, and it's him in a popcorn store, like,
oh, good Lord.
Picking out a flavor, and people are like, was fried chicken flavor? And
okay,
just inward, inward,
and also, like,
are you kidding me
right
now?
If you're
trying
to make a joke, first off, you don't do it that way, and second off, that's just lazy. It's
it
just
is lazy.
It's a lazy, like, oh, you know, just going back to that
like,
same
I'm
crap.
So glad that your great-grandparents taught you a stereotype once, but you're kind of unoriginal. Not only are you racist, you're an unoriginal racist,
and
that is the bigger problem.
And that's the thing, is like, I don't mind... I think he has definitely opened himself up to criticism. I happen to not agree with it, but I think JC's point is extremely valid. But whenever you go there,
there's no place for it.
Yeah, you're invalidating your own point. Yeah.
Well, we will put a pin in this Harvey Dent situation in development. I do want to announce that we're going to be doing a commentary for the Super Bowl. That is something that's definitely happening. It will be on February 2nd, pretty much as soon as kickoff. But here's the thing: I think we're going to do that will change up the proceedings a little bit. We're going to be doing a lot of talking during the game about the commercials and the trailers.
Yes.
And during the commercials and the trailers, there is going to be silence from us. So if you're a little like, I don't really want to listen to a Super Bowl commentary because I don't care about football, you do care about the geek movie trailers that inevitably come with the Super Bowl.
They're already doing trailers for the commercials on the Super Bowl.
They're doing trailers for the commercials at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's so weird.
One of which involves Arnold Schwarzenegger playing
table tennis. Oh my God, it
looks tennis.
So funny.
Yeah, so... This is something we're going to be doing. So again, I want to implore you, even if you don't give two shits about the teams playing in the Super Bowl or the Super Bowl at all, this might be a commentary that you'll have a lot of fun with because we're going to focus mainly on the commercials and the trailers.
And one thing I will say is like this is sort of the mission statement of our podcast is if you're not into sports, I completely understand that. I hated football when I was in middle school. Hated it. And I only got into it when I got into marching band and I had to go to the games. So what I would just say is if you're listening to this and you're not really into sports, just consider watching it. Just watch one.
Yeah.
Like, I was at the gym before we started recording this, and I don't really like college basketball that much. Like, I watch it every now and then. But Texas beat Kansas State on a last-second three.
Yeah.
You got to love the cinematic.
And I'm going to watch it now.
I'll say for this, it's kind of like a funny metaphor for that. I was not into soccer at all. Like, mm-hmm. I just didn't understand it, didn't really care about it, until I started following one team. If you can find one team and find one culture to follow and to really get behind, it's a lot more fun.
Can I follow the Ladybugs? Is that a soccer team I can still follow?
I'm like, hey, no respect over here. Speaking of Ladybugs, like one of my favorite...
Yeah, speaking of Ladybugs, I'm glad this is a segue.
No, but this is a segue. One of my favorite shirts that I have right now, I got it from, I think it's Ripped Apparel.
Where is this going?
Yo, this is actually on point. I wore it to work out the other day, and I got a few compliments. It was it's a Rockford Peaches.
Oh, nice.
Like gray property of Rockford Peaches shirt. It is awesome.
That is great.
So if you're on the lookout for that, it's really, really cool. See, it was going somewhere.
Okay. I made a reference to a movie. You talked about a shirt from a different movie. It's close enough.
Well, you said Ladybugs, and I'm like, lady, baseball.
Look,
and...
little aside, I'm not taking anything away from you. I don't think your segueing is mediocre or anything. Don't misquote me.
Hey, I'm not Michael Kamen.
There you go. Just so you know, that's kind of what's going on with the Super Bowl. And a couple other news bits we need to talk about before we get into our main topic here. Could the extra point in football be on its way out? Roger Goodell thinks it might be a good idea to get rid of it. And his solution, basically, Blake, you were reading about this. So tell the audience a little bit about... So obviously, you know, the extra point is kind of a gimme. If you kick a field goal, I think they said like five out of the last 1,200 extra point field goals have been missed. Yep. So obviously it's a gimme. So Roger Goodell thinks, hey, let's make it a little bit more interesting. And his proposal is...
He's proposing that a touchdown now will be worth 7 points. So you score a touchdown, 7 points, no extra point. If you want to keep your 7 points, that's fine. If you want to go for another point, You'll be going for, you know, the eighth point. You'll be getting an eighth, you know, 8 points. And if you don't do that, if you fail to convert, it goes down to 6 points. So he's basically suggesting that it's the 7 points without kicking it. And if you want to go for eight, you can get eight. And if you don't make it, you get six. And it's like, I don't understand why we have to complicate things to a point where we're okay, first off, there are still 5 missed field goals.
Yeah.
So to say that it's an automatic thing, I'm sorry, but it's not zero out of 1,200.
Statistically, it's pretty damn close.
Yeah, it's like 99.6%.
But here's the thing that I absolutely agree with. Michael Wilbon from Pardon the Interruption, nailed it when he said the only reason they're doing this is so they can get to the commercials quicker. They can have that one more commercial and they can sell more shit. So this whole idea of trying to make the game a little bit more exciting is bullshit.
It's bullshit, Mr. Handman.
That's exactly
because
what it
I'm
is.
Sorry. If that was your goal, then you wouldn't be instituting all these hit on defenseless receivers and making the place where you can actually tackle somebody, a fundamental of the game of football, into a strike zone about a foot wide. It's ridiculous. So don't give me this. We're trying to make the game more exciting. Bullshit. And I think Wilbon's nailed it. I think they have to wait that extra second before going to a commercial after a touchdown for them to get set up and to kick the extra point. And I think they're thinking if we get rid of that extra point entirely, as soon as the touchdown is scored, there's an extra commercial. There's more money coming in.
Here's what
NFL.
They're doing wrong. I am all for changing the game for better. But what I don't understand is that it's only up to Roger Goodell and
And the competition committee.
Yeah. What happened to the fans?
Which is the most oxymoronic thing I've ever heard. The NFL competition.
What happened
committee?
To the fans? And I mean, I know they don't give a shit about the fans anymore. They just want their money.
They
it's
obviously
just,
don't.
But what? Why not just be ask the fans? Take a poll. It's do you want to see extra? Do you still want to see extra points? Or you want to see more touchdowns? And the thing is that I just don't understand. All sports across the board do this. It's just we're changing the game because of this, this, and this. There's no fan support whatsoever. We completely are disregarded and thrown to the side, saying that you're just our cash cows. You go to the games. You will put stuff on the field and you watch it and you like it and that's it. You don't get any say into what happens, even though these are your teams and your cities. You don't get any say in that.
You know who's really going to dislike this is fantasy football players who are really? So now I can only get 3 to 6 points out of my field goal kicker instead of these extras for point after touchdown. I think the whole thing's ridiculous. I think they're looking at the absolute wrong place. If they really want to make the game more competitive and more exciting, this is the wrong place.
Well, Mark Brunell is probably he would be shitting his pants right now because the only thing that a backup quarterback does is hold the ball.
Exactly. Mark Brunell wouldn't have gotten his Super Bowl ring if this was the case.
I think my biggest concern is that with the changes they've been instituting these last few years, making it harder to play defense, making it easier to pass because they want a more pass happy league because it's better to televise. I like arena football, but I like the NFL too.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the NFL slowly become arena football.
Even arena football kicks extra points, and it's a little more challenging because the goalpost is narrower.
Yeah, so I just wish they would
just move him back a couple yards. Yeah, why is this if you really want to change it, just move him back
to
more
narrow. Or narrow the post. Narrow the post.
Yeah.
I don't understand. The post back, make it a 45-yard. 45 is kind of sort of a gimme, not really.
Let's say 35.
Yeah, 45 is not a gimme. I would say a 30, 35-yard.
And at least have some suspense. And where are you going in the end zone? If you go in the right or left, you have to kick from that hash mark instead of just right center.
Or somebody mentioned the way rugby does it, where they actually kick from the side and they have to angle it into the
or put
into the upper
all
ice.
The players on your team on the field against all the other players in the field and just have a big fucking
go XFL
crunch.
Style.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then the band could be on the field.
But this is a stupid idea, Roger Goodell. So I'm just gonna be done with that story, and we're going to move on to the next one.
Why does he want to shit on the one type of player that doesn't get concussions? I'm just saying, they're the only healthy players.
The one player that people aren't up your ass about to protect against concussions.
He's like, well,
you
want
to take off the field, all right.
They're not suing me.
Well, I'm calling this next story catcalls, but it's not anything to do with whistling at sexy women. JC, I think you probably are the best suited to explain to us exactly what the fuck is going on, because when I first heard this recording, I thought it was you.
Yeah, it's just kind of a funny story. An ESPN, or I don't even know if it was an ESPN affiliate, but a New York radio station was having a sports discussion about the Knicks, and this gentleman called in, and he must have been listening to another channel and called the wrong number or something, but he basically started talking about his 5 cats. And confused the hell out of the
apparently
out of the hosts.
What had happened is he'd been listening to ESPN radio, and they mentioned that dogs were better than cats. Just a very offhanded comment, which is entirely true. And then he went to call in to basically voice how upset he was and how cats are actually better, but he called a different radio station.
Yeah.
So he called WFAN, and I'm going to play a little snippet right here.
I have 5 cats in the house that never go out, and that's a little too many maybe, but they are anything but dull. I mean, it's like unbelievable. There has to be toys around the house. There has to be a what they call a cat environment. If you don't have that, you don't have the cat. The cats are going to be like you said. You never see them. Okay.
So, as you can hear, I mean, clearly, the hosts have no idea how to react. They're just sitting there in stunned silence as this guy espouses the merits of cat ownership. And by the way, sounds like a lonely cat lady, except he's a dude.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, okay, I need somebody to translate that for me. I don't understand what's going on here.
Funnily enough, I was waiting for him to make this like a huge metaphor for why the Knicks are awful this year. It's been like, he's talking about he has 5 cats, and I'm just like, okay, so he's going to say something about like how the 5 players on the court are like cats.
He does mention 5 cats.
It's just like, talking about basketball. It's just like, I can almost feel that the commentators are like, okay, where are you going with
It's kind of true, because Carmelo Anthony is kind of like a cat in that he does whatever the hell he wants.
He pisses on everyone. He may just leave for a while. He
doesn't
know
care that he pisses everyone off. And
he runs from one side of the court to the other for no damn reason.
See, that's what I wanted to hear, is the commentator.
No defense. Just, cats are terrible.
Just waits to be fed.
That's true. And I just wanted to hear the commentator, though, or the radio host just, like, make something up. Like, well, what he's clearly talking about with cats and dogs is the fact that we have 2 professional basketball teams here in New York with the Nets and the Knicks. And it's a turf war kind of thing where they're always going at each other. And it's you know, they fight like cats and dogs. And clearly what this is about is, like, the urban existence and being – and just, like, come up with something completely off the top of his head and just
and, you know,
going
once,
with it.
Once he
and instead off, they were just like, what the fuck happened just now?
Once he got off the phone, he must have just been like, yeah, I fucking told them.
Yeah, he was just like, proud he was. As soon as he's like, ha, I have made my arguments thusly. When like they were
stroking, he's stroking his 5 cats on his lap. He's just like, yes. Well,
my thing is, like, this is sort of a cautionary tale in that you can have, like, 2 cats. Like, I have a cat. But if you get over about 2, 3 maybe, but when you start getting up into 4, you're that guy.
Well, the best part, too,
I have 2 cats. There's nothing wrong with it.
The indignation.
Yeah, but
of all,
3?
Okay. And secondly,
3, 4, 5?
The indignation of this guy, like, how dare you say dogs are better than cats? Blah, 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 blah. And not even, like, so wrapped up in his own tirade that he doesn't even notice that he's called the wrong show.
Yeah.
Is there a follow-up to the story where someone else called in about dogs? Like, whoa, 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 you're going to say cats.
What I want to do now is I want to call in to Car Talk on NPR and just start talking about LeBron James. And they'll be like, what the fuck is a LeBron?
Oh, like they'll go Celtics talk on you. Those are Boston boys.
I'll talk about Carmelo Anthony, and they'll be like, a carburetor? What are you saying? I don't understand.
We'll call the beers and talk about white wine.
That's just what you would do.
Just to reiterate, it's not weird owning 2 cats. Hello, Zoe and Spade, because I make them listen.
No, it's not really.
Just leave this on.
It's not categorically weird or own 2 cats, but when you start getting into 3 and 4 and 5, then you're like, you run that possibility of being that dude.
Yeah. I was more making a joke about how I make my cats listen to the show.
And it was
I don't actually do that.
And it was perfect. So
yeah.
Okay, boy. Well, we're just gonna leave that one behind.
I can tell the family resemblance right now.
Really, of all the puns that you make, you're like, oh god, I meant
the story, Johnny Jump Up. Why don't you indignantly call this radio station and talk about cats for a while? We're going to ditch that story. And if nothing else, that one reminds us why we don't have call-in shows. Next up on the... Yeah, what's up,
Blake? One thing, Blake has a badass shirt from Legends of Hidden Temple on right now.
Yeah,
it's the Red Jaguars.
Which was the seminal sports show of our time.
It really was. That and Guts.
Yes.
I've made the comment many times. I'm like, you know, Nickelodeon, all these children television shows have gotten away from the best part. The best thing to watch on television is a kids' game show.
Yeah.
Put the kids in a huge
temple.
Because
those kids were dumb as fuck.
Yes, they were.
I'm sorry. It's 3 pieces. The Shrine of the Silver Monkey is 3
Thank
pieces.
You.
How fucking hard is it? You put the face down, you put the body in, and then you jam the head down. That's it. No, you don't reach into the trees in the dark forest. Yeah, you might find the other half of your pendant, but most likely you're going to get taken out of the temple because those trees are almost always possessed by the soul of a temple guard.
And the best,
this is fucking stupid, man. It's fundamental.
But the best thing about it is that whenever they get, like, they get confused, they sit there and they wait for the commentator to, like, tell them what they're doing. Yeah. It's like, I gotta put the monkey together. They're like, What? And the head goes on top of the body.
and then the steps of knowledge when they would ring in before the question was answered, they'd be like, is the answer Fago? No, I'm sorry, it was Ramses II. Now get the fuck off the stage. Anywho, yeah, that's great. Take your BK Ratch Tech and your lifetime supply of bazooka and get the fuck out of the studio if you lose
that
it.
That sounds like something that once you like hit 30, you'd be like, I don't want this anymore.
You would think once you turn 30, you would forget these things, but clearly that's not what's happening with me.
No, I still watch it on YouTube every now and then.
Yeah, also like Nickelodeon, if you're listening, or wait,
bring back Games and Sports,
or Cartoon Network. It's just like, dude, just one show.
Nickelodeon had a great network called Nickelodeon Games and Sports.
Yeah, it's called Gas. Yeah.
And
Gas.
We used to watch old episodes of Double Dare, of Legends of the Hidden Temple,
and Wild and Crazy Kids.
We were screaming at the TV, like every time, like the go, fucking go. You have 2 minutes, and you're fucking around. Like.
Not only that, but people forget that Michael Malley actually hosted two different game shows on Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Does anyone remember the name of the other one?
It was Get the Picture.
Get the Picture. Yeah. That is correct.
Yep. Indeed. Do you remember Nick Arcade?
Yep. I do remember Nick
Arcade. Yeah, they went inside the game.
Yeah, they made that like Tron shit at the end way too hard.
How did they even do that?
It was a blue screen. Okay. And that's what sucked for the contestants. They didn't really know what the fuck they were doing.
They're looking at the monitor like weathermen, like, where's the fucking
thing?
That's
exactly, yeah, it was like weathermen.
It's weird, I'm only slightly older than you guys, but I vaguely remember all of this stuff.
Yeah. You know, we should do an entire episode where all we talk about is the Nickelodeon, like, sports shows.
During the golden era of Nickelodeon.
You know, more than what this episode just became in the hijacking of this one. But
I also have a Nickelodeon.
Track the episodes down.
Hell yeah.
They're on YouTube. I actually haven't bookmarked.
Well, our next story, you know, some people will say, you know, they can't believe this next story, but Jamaica, they again have a bobsled team. Holy crap. Cool Runnings, y'all. It is back. The Jamaican bobsled team, kind of, is back. This is a two-man sled as opposed to a four in the original story, but the two-man sled team has qualified. And they got the money, or I don't know, have they actually done qualifications yet?
They're qualified.
No, yeah, they qualified. They just need the money to get there.
Well, they've made a lot of the money to get there, actually. They've crowdsourced it from Reddit, from Kickstarter.
From Indiegogo also.
Indiegogo, yeah. I mean, they're getting money basically just from people, and I'm sure they're using the, like, hey, we're a Jamaican bobsled team, and we would like to go to the
Olympics.
Would
anyone give a shit about the Jamaican bobsled team if it wasn't for Cool Runnings?
No.
I think it's so funny that Runnings is still relevant even today.
Well, no, actually, Dougie
Fresh was a movement.
So the thing about the movie is the movie made it seem like nobody wanted them there, but in real life, people were like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Yeah.
The Jamaican bot, and they were totally welcoming. So, I think if there were no Kickstarter, the people would find a way to bring them.
My favorite thing about that movie, too, is the fact that, like, not only did they not want them there, there was a German team that was, like,
the East German team.
East Germany doesn't, Jamaica, go back home, you know? It's just like, what are you doing?
There are two things that we can credit for the fall of the Berlin Wall. One is Rocky. In his glorious speech after beating Ivan Drago. The second, for some reason, is Dougie Doug. I don't know.
And also, three, David Hasselhoff.
But that's David Hasselhoff.
Since Dougie Doug looks like Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman maybe... brought about the end of communism. That's
essentially... It's a mediocre wall. Don't try that.
Don't put that wall in front of me. I'll tear it down.
So Richard Sherman, what is he? What's the dude from Doctor Who? Is he a time...
He's a Time Lord.
Okay, yeah. I don't watch Doctor Who.
What is Doctor Who? Is he a real doctor? Is he like an optometrist?
I think we're not giving proper due for the Jamaican bobsled movement to the now deceased John Candy.
Yeah. He definitely made that movie sometime. Yeah.
Nor are we giving enough credit to Red Stripe, who really kept that team alive after they failed to win the Olympics, and then he just moved back to Jamaica and sold Red Stripe.
They did beer!
Oh, they sold some alcohol. I don't remember exactly.
The one Doris and the one Sanka and the two
the
guys.
The fastest Jamaica sprinter. Go to Olympics, run for Jamaica.
Do you still remember that? Feel the rhythm.
Feel the vibe.
Get on up. It's bobsled time.
Yeah, this is my life right now, and I am so happy.
Be happy. This is awesome.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So, yeah, the Jamaican bobsled team root them on as they go to Sochi, which I was convinced was a Mega Man bad guy, but apparently is the place where the Olympics are being held.
Well, and also, JC tweeted this picture this morning of these toilets.
Oh my god.
These public restrooms in Sochi that have no walls.
It's like a bathhouse.
Yeah.
Like,
you have to remember that this is a country where if you are gay, you go to prison, but apparently you shit while looking into the eyes of your neighbor.
Dude, would you go in there, take a dump, and just, like, stare somebody down?
No, I wouldn't go to Russia. I want to make it very clear. It's not because of their political policies, but because of this exact thing. There is no way I'm using a public bathroom where I have to shit next to somebody else and just be like, hey, What's up?
I do the blinking contest, you know, like the stare contest. Do not blink. Just like
I don't use public bathrooms in the first place because they freak me out. But you take that dividing wall away, and this is my nightmare. Russia has invented my nightmare. Like, you put giant spiders in this who have like styrofoam that they're playing with, and you've encompassed my entire nightmare.
I don't like the idea of making new friends.
No, I don't.
I can see you having like a Kramer from Seinfeld situation where you have to go, and like you go and but like you leave and you do like a Ruxin. Forever unclean.
And honestly, too, like, the whole thing about, this is gonna, I mean, I'm not gonna try to go too gross here, but, like, the whole thing.
Oh,
about,
no, go
like,
for it.
The great thing about public restrooms and, like, having walls is that you can clog the toilet and leave, and no one will ever know that it was you. If everyone is sitting around you, and you clog that toilet, everyone's gonna remember your face, because that's just, I mean, if you're gonna have, like, 30 toilets around you.
I remember when we were in elementary school, like, that's one of the reasons I never really went to the bathroom in elementary school, is, like, for some reason, like, we had a game where we would keep track. Like, was he he's the one who took the clock. And, like, we would write that shit on the board. It'd be like, Kevin so-and-so clogged the toilet.
You were writing with shit on the walls?
Well, it was a poor school.
Oh, okay.
Poor school.
Well.
You know some cultures actually cook with cow dung?
No, Elliot, but thanks
I'm just saying, sorry.
You know, thanks fried? For culturing in this show. Anything fried is delicious.
Anything fried is delicious.
Well, they
delicious.
Cook it inside of it, like, wrapped in newspaper, and just for the heat, and then take it out.
Awesome.
Sorry.
Cool. This is like bizarre food.
Do they have that at Chili's?
What do you want for your last meal? Shit.
Cow dung.
Bring me cow dung wrapped in nachos from Chili's.
Maybe Outback?
No. All right. Well, that's all I got to say to this team is you're making me care about the Olympics again, and I appreciate it. And I think we may have one more story that we're going to talk about before we get into our main topic. It's now time to honor those who exhibit such extraordinary skills or attributes that we can't by all rights call them human, so clearly they are secretly part of the robot uprising to destroy humanity. We're talking, of course, about he might be a cyborg. Yes, it's back!
Yeah, we haven't done this in a while.
He might be a cyborg, and this week the cyborg is Milwaukee Bucks rookie... Jesus Christ, I actually have to attempt to say this name. Giannis... Is this Klingon?
Antetokounmpo.
Is this written in fucking Klingon? This is a real name? Okay,
Is his name Kalis?
Antetokounmpo, who has... The guy has...
You could call him the Greek Freak, because that's his nickname.
The Greek Freak, and that is an apt term, because if you've seen the guy's hands... I mean, he has freakier hands than the fairy-eating monster in Pan's Labyrinth.
Jesus Christ.
They are enormous. They're like silver serving platters. More than their actual hands.
He could pick up a whole pizza with his hand.
He could pick up a whole Volvo with his hand.
Well, good. All I gotta say is, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
What did you say earlier about his girlfriend?
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
No, I think you should say it.
No, you should
say it. What Elliot said earlier is that he...
After he wished that the guy's parents were dead.
No! What did you say?
No, that would be crass and rude. What he said is he thinks the guy's girlfriend is probably pretty sore.
Was he Batman? Is that why his parents are dead?
I'm just saying, commit to the role.
So the cool thing about Giannis is he's 19 years old. He's a rookie with the Milwaukee Bucks. He's 6'9" tall.
Damn, he's got...
If you're 6'9" on the average, your wingspan should be around 6'10", 6'11". His wingspan is 7'3".
Damn!
Apparently he is a Batman.
Do his hands go
his wingspan.
Does his hands go all the way to the floor while he's standing up? Like, how the hell does that even work? You have a 7'3" wingspan.
And, amazingly enough, he's still growing.
Oh, holy shit!
It's a story that I found earlier in the year. When he was... Yeah, he's listed at 6'9", because that's what he was when they went to the rookie combine. A few months ago, somebody measured him again, and he now measures 6'10".
Damn. So he grew an inch since the rookie combine?
Yeah. He's
talk about an angry inch.
Yeah, he's still growing, and doctors have looked at him in his genetic makeup. They estimate he's going to end up growing another 3 inches.
He's a super Greek. Super Greek.
Like he's super Greek.
Like, and he's almost Yao.
True story. Yeah, this guy has to be a robot. Like, and not only that, but he's a poorly made robot. Like, they didn't understand human dimensions exactly, so they were just
he's
like...
freakishly skinny.
So he's Johnny 7 foot.
Yeah, he's Johnny 7 foot. And they were like, well, just slap something that looks like human skin over this completely cumbersome endoskeleton, and we'll try and pass it off as a human being.
This reminds me of, like, when I was at college, we used to watch, like, for some reason, the gymnasts would always be dating, like, these huge football players, and the gymnasts are, like, 4 foot nothing.
They're very bendy.
And I'm like, how does... That can't even work.
You ever watch Gumby?
Just saying, like,
their kids are either going to be really, really tiny, or
you ever think
like,
to yourself, "I bet that Minga is a great lay." I'm gonna let you guys.
No, because I'm not attracted to Clay.
Okay, that's fine. You know what? Judge all you want.
My
Bible
football
says
coach
not
in high
to.
School. My football coach in high school always talked about how he wanted to marry like a big, tall, like muscular woman, so he could have like big kids. He ended up marrying like a 4'10" Filipino woman.
Keeps it spinning.
And his kids are not very big.
They're probably shockingly average. Enough. They're probably like, oh, he's 6 foot.
Yeah,
he's
my football coach is like 6'4", and like weighed 320 pounds. His wife is like 4'10", couldn't have weighed more than 120 pounds.
Well, it's like my dad is, my dad's 5'11", and I'm like 5'5", and he's like, oh, you're short. I'm like, you're the one that married my mom. She's 4'10".
This is
your fucking fault.
You did this, Dad. I learned it from being born from you.
I have a big head and I'm short because of you. Those are your genes.
Well, definitely keep an eye on this guy whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce a second time, but he's clearly some sort of cyborg and needs to be monitored at all times. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to do our main topic. We're going to talk about the Pro Bowl, but not in the way that you probably think we would, because the Pro Bowl is fucking boring. So we're going to do our own spin on the Pro Bowl that involves movies and other geek properties, and we will be right back with that in just a moment. Stay classy, sports nerds. Well, we're back because we're not somewhere else, and it is time for our Pro Bowl discussion. Now, normally, the Pro Bowl is, what is the word I'm looking for? Dull as balls. It is such a boring display. It's basically like football players on vacation and we're watching their home videos. With the exception of Sean Taylor going ham on that Buffalo punter when he tried to run the fake.
May he rest in peace. Not Sean Taylor, but the punter.
And at first it looked like we'd be saying that about the punter, where nobody told Sean Taylor, like, it's the fucking Pro Bowl, dude. Like, take it down a notch, why don't you?
I was going to say, more people watch the Pro Bowl than do watch the World Series. So
that's interesting.
And they changed it up, too. They've now changed the Pro Bowl where two players, like, pick, like, it's not NFC versus AFC anymore. It's like, you know, they pick.
It's like a playground thing.
Exactly.
I mean, not to slam baseball too much, but I'm pretty sure more people watch the Puppy Bowl than watch the World Series.
Yeah.
So.
They're so cute.
They're so adorable when they're in their little uniforms and they're playing baseball.
Can we watch
the Puppy Bowl.
Can we watch the Puppy Bowl at halftime of our life?
Of course we'll watch the Puppy Bowl at halftime.
That's even cuter. And there's even a Fish Bowl this year.
I'm not going to get into a debate with you about which is cuter, but it's the Puppy Bowl.
Well, we're going to have somebody call in and try to defend cats.
That's true. Be like, sir, you've actually made an apt phone call right now.
It's well, I'd say, I think the league that does it the best in terms of All-Star, in terms of when they schedule it, which is like they have a break in the middle of the season, NBA, for my money, does it the best. Because they make it a weekend, and I watch all the events, like the dunk contest and the three-point shootout, and they have like sometimes they have a concert. It's just like a fun atmosphere, because if it's going to be a party and the players don't care, make it a party.
Yeah.
Like, give it that atmosphere.
I mean, normally the Pro Bowl is about as much fun as playing Tetris after you've played Dr. Mario. Like, it's just like, really? This is all there is?
The Home Run Derby is also really fun, too. But it's just, you know, it's just the NFL Pro Bowl is the worst Pro Bowl that I feel like there is. Like, I really think that, you know, I really think that it's the weakest of the three, and that's why they've already tried to change it up. So,
well, I think this year is going to be sort of fun to watch, because I want to see who gets picked last.
It's going to be a punter. Like,
I want to see what real football player gets picked last, and then I want to see how that breaks down if they're playing for pride. If they're like, you know what, the only thing bad is like there's going to be there's probably not going to be any Seahawks.
There's no Seahawks or
Broncos on it.
But it's really funny is that imagine if Sherman got picked last. He's like, I ain't going to be on your team. You have picked me. I'm the best quarterback ever. Blah, blah, blah.
You put a mediocre Pro Bowl in front of me and I will play in it. If I am not already obligated to play in the Super Bowl, of course, is what I mean. So we're going to do our own version where we're going to talk about our favorite Pro Bowls as they relate to movies. And I will kick this off to give you an example of what I'm talking about. I'm going to talk about the film Monster Squad for a second. Fred Dekker, mid-80s film, very much in a similar vein as The Goonies. But instead of, you know, searching for pirate treasure, it is a group of kids who are adorably crass. I mean, I love the way these kids talk to each other. And their whole thing is that they're obsessed with monsters. Well, wouldn't you know it, all of the Universal monsters end up showing up in this ancient plot of Dracula's trying to take over the world, blah, blah, blah. And very much in the style of an 80s movie, it is the kids who have to deal with the supernatural threat because adults are either inept or absent completely. I love that about the 80s. You don't see that a lot anymore with the exception of, like, Attack the Block.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of movies anymore where it's all about the kids solving a supernatural crisis. And I'm not talking about animated film. I'm talking about a big studio movie in which kids are the protagonists, and not even necessarily a movie that's entirely for kids. And that very much is what Monster Squad. Monster Squad has some really freaky transformation scenes. John Grease, who a lot of people know as Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, plays the werewolf, and his transformation scene is pretty horrific. And then he gets blown to pieces at one point and, like, comes back together like T-1000. So, I mean, there's a lot in this movie that is clearly not just for kids, but, you know, for the adults to appreciate as well. And I think of this movie as the Pro Bowl of Universal Monsters because you have the best of the best. You have you have Dracula, you have Frankenstein's Monster, you have Wolfman, you have the Creature from the Black Lagoon, all coming together in one film. And I love what Fred Decker did with it, and to me it is the Pro Bowl of Universal Monsters. That is what we're talking about when we talk about movies that represent the Pro Bowl of XYZ. Elliot, why don't you talk about a movie that you consider to be the Pro Bowl of something?
Well, I'm going to save my obvious one for later.
Okay, but I have no idea what it might be.
But I'm going to say the one I think, I forgot the article, the guy who wrote it, but you were talking about it. Fast and the Furious has turned into the bro version of the Avengers.
Yeah, then my buddy Eric Davis over at movies.com came up with that concept, and I think it's completely apt.
And, like, the man nailed it. Like, that's exactly what it is. I mean, you got the surfer dude, you got the cocky black guy in Tyrese, who's just now all comedy relief, even though if you watch his character, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, Tyrese is sort of gay in those movies. Like, every appearance he has, like, even in the sixth one, he's telling Han's character, oh, you into her, huh? You got some stars in your eyes. Well, you know, you get away from her. It's like, you told that to Paul Walker in the second one.
It's funny. I find it interesting that Tyrese continues to make so much bank off these movies, and not only in terms of box office, but in terms of, like, fan appeal. Like, he's still in the limelight because of these films, despite the fact that he has some of the worst fucking dialogue of any of the characters in these.
But
it went from Mission Impossible to Mission Freaking Sanity is one of the worst pieces of dialogue I've ever heard.
It's so funny.
Mission Impossible to Mission Freaking Insanity!
Elliot makes a good point, because there is that point in the sixth one where he's in the plane with all these beautiful women, he gets a phone call, and he's like, oh, hey, I'm not gonna bang these women, I'm gonna go.
It's like, I got some vouchers.
Yeah.
Then you got Samoan Thor, also known as The Rock.
Yeah.
Who is your law enforcement badass. You got the Uber Alpha badass, who's your Captain America. That's Vin Diesel.
Mm-hmm.
You got their secret agent who got turned around and is now lost in memory, Michelle Rodriguez. You got the turncoat, you got the traitor, you got the badass that, like, the weapons expert. And
you got the guy who's way too committed to it, Paul Walker.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think he's more of, like, your everyman.
That was a joke.
Ah.
Okay. Because he died in a car accident.
Yeah.
See, sorry. Robert. Dark.
Too sorry. Soon.
Dark. It's not too soon, but just, I didn't.
It is too soon.
It's like, was it 2 months
hold
ago?
Hold on, judges. It's too soon. Okay.
A lot of times we joke and say too soon, and it's not. It's just a little soon.
That's fine. Well, fine.
He works as in, like, the avatar for your regular moviegoer.
True.
Because he, you're like, this guy hangs with these people? Okay.
Well, and as we were saying before, like, especially with the most recent movies, it is the Pro Bowl of all the previous films in this franchise, which up until about the fourth one didn't feel connected at all.
Nope.
Felt completely scattered to the winds.
But they brought it back.
They sure as shit brought it back.
Justin Lin did a job there.
Yeah. So I think definitely, at the very least, the last couple movies are the Pro Bowl of their own franchise, which is a really weird thing.
Yeah, and the thing is, an All-Star game or a Pro Bowl, the only thing it has to do, it doesn't have to make any big statement. It doesn't have to be artistically, like, relevant. It doesn't have to make any difference in the league or anything. It just has to be entertaining. And Fast and the Furious isn't trying to make some big social statement. It's just trying to entertain you for 2 hours.
They picked the best or the most memorable characters from each movie. Even fucking Tokyo Drift, which I actually like that movie.
I like that movie a lot.
It's so awful.
It's so stupid.
And whatever the main character's name is, the way he just talks is like...
Lucas Black is the actor.
He's like, Drift? And he's also like he plays an 18-year-old that's like not supposed to leave the house, even though he's like 30 years old by the movie. You know, it's just like, he's like, what are you doing leaving the house? He's like, I'm a man, Dad. Like,
I don't want your car.
It's one of those things. I wonder what he looks like now, because in chronologically, this seventh one that he's going to be in has to be...
He still should be 18.
Has to be, like, immediately after the third one when he should still look 18.
Is he going
to
be in the new one?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was going to say, he's got to be, like, in his 40s
They managed to take the best character from those from three. Han was by,
yeah,
far and away the only interesting character.
Yeah.
Only because he was really cool, but he also took Brad Pitt's thing from Ocean's 11, where he was always eating. It's like, I just want to show my jawline.
Always eating. Yeah, that's true.
What about you, JC? What is your first Pro Bowl pick here?
The first one, my category is going to be, I'll go with the Pro Bowl of movies that I've seen on sports movies lists that are not actually sports movies.
Okay.
The first one is Gladiator.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember where. I've seen one, like,
best sports where people add it to sports movie lists.
Yeah, but, and I'm like, it's not really a sports movie. This is not a sports movie. Gladiator is directed by Ridley Scott. Really awesome Russell Crowe performances. Mm-hmm. There are, scenes in the Coliseum where he is fighting, but it's definitely not a sports movie, but it's just a really badass movie.
I thought you were just going to leave it as there are scenes in the movie. It is composed of shots.
Yeah.
People say things.
Yeah.
If it's a sports movie... Aren't you entertained?
Shut up, Elliot. Just shut the hell right up. But what is this the Pro Bowl of, JC? What is Gladiator the Pro Bowl of?
The Pro Bowl of movies that are incorrectly ranked as sports movies.
Right here, fist pound. I like that. I like that a lot. Very nice.
Very well. Yeah. Very well. I like that. Blake, what is your first? See, we're doing this exactly like the actual Pro Bowl this year, where we're lining up the team captains, in this case the four of us, and we're just making picks. So, so far I've claimed Monster Squad. Elliot has claimed, I guess, the last three Fast and the Furious movies, and JC has claimed erroneousness. So it's up to you. What are you picking?
Well, Elliot mentioned a little bit before, but I'm picking Ocean's 11, the new one, because it's
well, like that'd be Ocean's 13.
Well, it's the new.
I see the remake.
The Ocean's remake 11, of Ocean's, because right. The last one, whatever.
Yeah.
It's all these dramatic actors coming together. I mean, I know Matt Damon's been in...
If nothing else, I mean, they're huge, huge stars. I mean, that movie should not be able to get that many people into one film.
You have George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, even older stars like the guy from The Long Goodbye.
Elliot Gould.
Julia Roberts.
And Carl Reiner.
Yeah, Carl Reiner. Don Cheadle.
I forgot her name. She's really, really cute. Black hair. She's in the second one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, she's in the second one.
If you're gonna pick most of the Fast and Furious, every movie,
in that
franchise, really, like, it's just all these all stars coming together, and it's a huge, like, it's basically like a Pro Bowl for heist movies.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like that's what's great about it.
I think Blake, what you're actually saying is that it is the Pro Bowl of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's true. I mean, the funniest thing about the movie though is like the villains of the movie are. Either, like, really over the top, like Andy Garcia in Ocean's 11 is by far, like, we always quote him because
I like that you like it.
Yeah, it's like, test,
test,
test, test. I mean, just, the way test. He delivers his lines is just like, man, this guy is
And he
like,
walks like a gorilla.
He's, like, asleep all the time. Like, yeah. He just looks like he's...
And it also has, like, this, the line where it's like...
Run and hide.
Do you have a death wish? Are you suicidal? Only in the mornings.
Only in the mornings. Yeah, and the witty lines, like all the character development, and the fact that, like, you know, I remember when it first came out, everyone was like, "Oh, I have to rewatch it because the way that they, you know, described how, you know, like how they pulled it off and everything is like really confusing." And now I just like it. I can put it on in the background and I can just like tune in my favorite parts.
Yeah.
And it's just like even with 13 and I mean 12 is kind of like the weakest of the three, but 13 is just as strong as Ocean's 11, and it's like it's just so good. And it's like if you really have not seen any of these movies, like I don't know what you're doing with your life. Yeah. You really need to go see it. Like, it is that good.
Yeah, you know, full
They're one of the ones that I can rewatch all the time. And I'm impressed with how they came together because, like, even with the Avengers, you heard rumblings about how once the cast found out that Robert Downey Jr. was getting paid $50 million and the rest of the cast was getting paid not nearly that much.
I love a good deal.
It kind of rubbed some people the wrong way. And this entire cast managed to come back two more times. And I don't know if anyone got paid any more than the other one. But
I mean, George Clooney and Brad Pitt alone would cost you like a huge summer blockbuster probably budget.
That's true.
Like,
yeah, I'm sure at the time Scott Conn and Casey Affleck were just grateful for the work.
In that sense, you really have to credit Ocean's 12 with, at the very least, being able to bring everybody back without including Ultron. So,
yeah.
Good job, Ocean's 12.
They had the touch.
They did have the touch,
and I don't know if they're making possibly the power. They're making a new one, but even Bernie Mac put in a solid performance. And I'm not.
Oh yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of Bernie Mac, but man, he was just as integral to those movies as
he has one of my favorite lines of any movie I've ever seen. I think it was in 12 where he was like, "Let me break it down like a fraction for you."
Yeah,
I use that shit all the time.
Break it down like a fraction. For my second pick, I'm going with a little art house film. You guys may not have heard of, and that's fine. But it's Freddy versus Jason. And this film is, just by definition, by strict concept, the Pro Bowl of 80s slashers. I mean, bringing these two titans of murder into one film and letting them go head-to-head, that's a huge, awesome thing. And unlike movies like Alien vs. Predator, it's actually fun to watch.
Oh my God.
And you get to see the attributes of these two killers that you've loved in their, like, it seems weird to fetishize these guys because they are, in fact, murderers. But, you know, if you grew up watching, you know, these franchises, these horror films, these two titans, man, they're just, like, going at it hardcore, and it's great. I absolutely love this film, and it has a real sports element to it where it is a straight-up head-to-head competition between the two of them, you know, and there's only going to be one winner, and it's debatable, I think, who even won that game. So it ends on this question mark, much like that AFC Championship game where the Steelers totally cheated and invented replay and the Colts didn't get to the Super Bowl. That's fine. Late 90s, look it up. It's the reason we have replay.
For me, like, the reason why that movie is so successful and why I think that, you know, a lot of people like it is because, like, I think that when it came out, like, I was of the mass or the majority of people were like, this is stupid. Why would they, you know, like, it's not going to work, you know, like, before I even saw it, I was like, there's no way that this is going to work. And then when they saw it, and when I saw it, I was like, wow, like, that was actually really good. Like, you know, like, because of all those, the series just started going downhill. You know, they put Jason in space, like, just all the stupid shit that they did.
Jason X rocks.
I mean, Jason X is fucking phenomenal.
What I like about it a lot is, yeah, like Blake said, it could have easily been a cash grab, and they not put any effort into it. The story actually kind of made sense within the canon of the franchise.
Well, and that's the thing I liked about it too is they were using, like I said, they're using the attributes. So Freddy is actually using Jason to give people nightmares again, so that he can come back.
Yeah,
and that's such a great concept. I really like what they did with it. Yeah, it's well, not, neither of them use a hook, Elliot. Come on,
this Michael isn't Myers.
Freddy versus the.
Or I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Brian's gonna kill me.
I'm gonna pick one of the things you just mentioned and kill you.
You haven't seen?
No. He just credited hooks to Michael Myers.
Knife thing.
Knife thing. Yeah, you're right. He uses a knife thing. God damn it, Ellie.
Okay, well, I'm gonna bring something that's making me even more mad at me. Would you consider there was a Madea movie where she was in a movie with Lair the Cable Guy? would that be a Pro Bowl?
Stop giving Tyler Pro Bowl
racial characters.
I'm gonna stop you right there. Pro Bowl. Meaning they're good at what they do.
Madea versus Madea.
No. Tyler Perry versus his own lack of talent is not a Pro Bowl.
Here's my thing about Tyler Perry. I've never seen a Madea movie, but I saw the Confessions, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. I'm going to spoil the ending of this movie because I've told it to people, and no matter what, you're not going to believe the ending of the story.
Does it involve Jesus?
No. Because the ending of the story was told to me, spoiled for me, and I didn't believe it, so I went and saw it for myself. Spoiler alert, everyone gets AIDS.
Are you serious?
Holy shit, everyone
has AIDS. What's this movie called?
AIDS.
Confessions of a Marriage.
Oh, I'm watching this bad boy tonight because I want to see this.
It was called Tastations, Confessions of a Failed Hershey's Hard Candy.
Did he rent the script from somebody?
I don't know.
Is it a horror movie?
Anywho, so in answer to your horrible question, Elliot.
Sorry.
No.
And I didn't even hear the rest of your question, but I was just like, stop talking.
You know what? I have been very conscious the last couple shows about making sure that I'm not picking on you.
No, I bring it on myself, listeners.
If you fucking ever say that to me again, if you ever pose the question to me as to if there's any artistic merit or entertainment value to the idea of Madea and Larry the Cable Guy being in the same film, I will physically bounce you out of this office through the window directly into the parking garage.
I wouldn't have to LeBron then. Which, oh, by the way, nobody posted any gifts of LeBron.
Nobody posted gifts of themselves LeBron.
They're afraid of me shitting in the box. I was going to do it too.
You know what? We need some Richard Sherman gifts for sure. So just do that.
Let's do mediocre gifts.
You put that mediocre gift on my website, I'm going to take it down every time. Don't test me. Don't you talk about me. Anyway. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Elliot, your actual answer.
My actual answer is Pacific Rim.
What?
I know it's weird.
What is Pacific Rim?
Well, it's this.
I mean, I know it's an area of active volcanoes in the Pacific.
When a man and a woman love each other very much.
That's Pacific Rim Job. And that is the 1,000th time that someone has made that joke.
Well, I wasn't actually going to go there, but cool. I love any movie that doesn't have, it's an action movie, but it doesn't have an American-centric focus.
Mm.
It definitely focuses on the American pilot.
You like the less jingoistic action.
Yeah, because I can get behind those better, because...
Are you familiar with a guy named John Woo by any chance?
Yeah.
You should... Oh, okay. Well, then yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I love when you can see, like, countries saying, you know what? This is a big alien problem. Not one country is going to solve this. How about there's Chernobyl Alpha from Russia. There's Starker Uriga from Australia. There's Crimson Dynamo from China. And there's Gypsy Danger from America. And at the very...
There's Crunchy Dildo from the last episode of Digital Noise.
It's like Gundam, isn't it? It's like the Gundam idea. Like, people come... Yeah. Like, you know, pilots come in from across the world.
And even better, it's the Pro Bowl of actually... and Matt Frank could probably talk about this better, of kaiju and just that genre, because it gives nods to that. It doesn't just, you know, say, well, we're taking all this shit now and we don't care what came before us. It sort of gives nods to, you know, stuff that came before, and I always respect when a movie does that. Especially when they're not trying to, you know, make an Oscar movie, but they're just trying to have fun. But they say, you know what, we still can't act like we invented all of this. That would be mine.
Right on. JC?
My pick for Pro Bowl of movies that are erroneously listed as sports movies on some lists. it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I've seen Fight Club on the list of best sports movies, and I'm just like, what? Really? It's not a sports movie at all.
Hold on. But you've already had a pick that was the Pro Bowl of being erroneously listed as a sports movie, so clearly Fight Club has to be the Pro Bowl of something else.
Oh, I thought it was two movies in the same category.
Yeah. No, but we got, there's got to be something else that Fight Club is the Pro Bowl of.
Misplaced male aggression.
Boom! There it is. Misplaced male aggression. Fight Club, the Pro Bowl of misplaced male aggression.
The Pro Bowl of that every movie a guy watches when he's 23 and thinks really relates to him.
I had an English professor in high school who was also, by the way, the football coach, and he taught advanced English. So he would like draw up plays on the football field and then also giggle as he taught us Kublai Khan. It was just like, you guys know this is about sex, right? This is fucking hilarious. He that guy embodies everything that became this podcast, because he was such a nerd for literature, and he was also a really funny guy, and he was like probably more crass with the students than he would have been allowed to be if he wasn't also a winning football coach.
Yeah, those are always coaches as teachers. They're like, fuck it.
But you know, most coaches will take, like, I'll teach computer science or I'll teach, I health. Don't know, health.
Yeah.
No, this guy was like, give me Yeats, give me Wordsworth, give me Walden. Give me Walden. Yeah, give me all that shit. I love literature.
Give me fucking Faulkner.
He assigned me Faulkner, actually.
Was he the linebacker or quarterback's coach?
No, he was the head coach. Oh, okay. He was the actual head coach of the football team. And they were the my senior year, they went undefeated in regular season. So.
Did he call his plates like his plays like, was it Fahrenheit 451?
Well, he had this play.
Fahrenheit 451.
He had this play where all of the players would push the running back just as hard as they could. He called it the Sisyphus. And they just kept pushing him, even though it seemed like they weren't going to get anywhere. They just kept pushing him.
Also known as the one of us.
The one of us. Thanks, Elliot.
No, but you put that on Facebook today.
Keep pushing and we're not getting anywhere?
No, you put it on Facebook. You said, like...
Oh, I said that I wasn't thinking of it as Tuesday had arrived as much as that I slayed Monday.
I'm just quoting what you said. I wouldn't insult you.
All right, I'm watching you, buddy.
Every step I take.
Fight Club is the Pro Bowl of misplaced male aggression.
I'm
like
so disappointed.
But anyway, wait, hold on. I didn't get to the point of my story about my English teacher, which was that he called Fight Club the most Aristotelian movie of all time because at its heart, it's about breaking every aspect of existence down to its most primitive primal form. And what is the most primal form of male-to-male interaction? It's fighting. Beating the shit out of each other, because we are, like, evolutionarily speaking, like, we are tuned to compete with one another to survive. So that movie strips away all the bullshit and just gets back to what makes us human beings, and that is, unfortunately, violence.
Well, to compete to find the social order.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, of course, I was in high school, I was like, what the fuck? I gotta watch this movie again. I thought it was about punching and soap.
I've never ever thought of it that way, but it makes a whole lot more sense now.
It really does.
If you look at just the way a lot of men solve arguments. You get in a fight with somebody, you know where you stand. And that argument usually doesn't come back up again, not because you're scared of the guy, it's over.
I love that movie says that, you know, the only true way to settle disputes is to be primal and just fight it out. And we just have podcasts. Yeah. I mean, we're a little far away from Project Mayhem around here.
And I just say, from my experience, I've watched like fights that have lasted years, where if those two dudes were just getting a fist fight once,
yeah,
they get it all out, and they'd probably be sore for like, they'd probably be mad at each other for another week, but then they have a beer and they'd be fine. But you get these fights that, and I'm not advocating fist fights, but I'm just saying, like, you get some of these fights that, like, people get pissed about one thing, it gets taken the wrong way,
yeah,
and then, like, they do stuff back to them, and then all of a sudden it's, like, 2 years and they don't talk to each other.
Well, mm-hmm. And not only that, but it's, like, you have, like, especially when you do stuff online, and we're finding this out firsthand, is, like, even if you're not fighting with someone, if your relationship is not perceived as interesting enough by people, Lord, they'll just make shit up about...
Oh, yeah.
Like, people find conspiracy in the most ridiculous thing. Like, they feel comfortable in conspiracy when the truth is just, it's
the truth is boring, mundane.
The truth is boring, and the truth is nobody's fighting with anybody. No. Get over it. Come on.
Like, the truth is, like, I hang out with, like, this group, and y'all all hang out.
Yeah.
Like, there's no
bad blood. But people, again, like, they find a refuge in conspiracy sometimes, yeah. And I think it's really silly, but what are you going to do? Blake, what's your next pick?
I was just going to say that y'all are talking about Fight Club. And you don't talk about Fight Club.
We did break the rule.
But besides that, I'm going to wrap this up by just saying, Argus, you're going to go again.
No. You got the last one, buddy.
So
take us out on a high note.
It's pretty easy.
No pressure.
To say that if you're going to talk about, you know, taking bits and pieces and then putting it all together as a Pro Bowl team, the all-star team, you'd have to say the Avengers.
Oh, absolutely.
It's really easy to say that. And honestly, like...
With the Trump card.
What's great about that movie is that... It's easy to pick out Robert Downey Jr. as the best Avenger. It's really easy to do that, but when you look at it, like, from a movie's point, like, I feel like every character is represented equally across the board, and I feel like that going into it, I was just like, man, that's going to be really hard to do, because, like, the Hulk probably, like, was the least, I guess, least effective movie. I love the movie, like, the one with Edward Norton, but I would say that as that character came, you know, into it, I would say that he would probably be least represented, and he wasn't at all.
No.
So that's what I really liked about it. It was like, okay, Thor had his moments, you know, the Hulk had his moments, Robert Downey Jr. had his moments, but they weren't overbearing enough where you're just like, man, he's the star of the show, because...
So I can actually break a couple of things about this. One, I think it's a great choice because in terms of a Pro Bowl is about picking the players who all season long have sort of gotten themselves to a point where they've outperformed everybody else, and it's been building toward, you know, that Pro Bowl game. And that's exactly what Marvel did from the time they released Iron Man, is it was always the intention to get to that point where you bring all these. So this wasn't happenstance. This was, right. I mean, this, what your example and Elliot's Fast and the Furious, this is all, like, you know, it's something that was organized, something that was planned from the beginning. Or at least from movie 3 in Elliot's case.
Yeah, just from movie 3.
But anyway, and the other thing is, you can actually go through the Avengers and be like, okay, well, if you think about it in terms of a football team, Captain America is definitely the quarterback, because there's even a point where Tony Stark says, call it.
Call it.
Yeah.
And then you have the two cocky receivers in Robert Downey Jr. and with his long hair that kind of makes him look like Riley Cooper, Thor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have the bruising defensive player that is the Hulk. And then you have, I don't know, the offensive line and the special teams coach that are...
No, that's exactly what it is.
Like, the offensive line exactly that are Black Widow and Hawkeye, because it's just like, yeah, you're important to the team, I guess.
Even the way he calls it, even the way the Cap calls it, like, he goes, call it, Captain, he goes, okay, well, they're going to... Iron Man, you hit the perimeter. Anything gets 3 blocks out, you turn it back, or you turn it to Ash. Thor, you got the lightning, light the bastards up. Hulk. Smash.
Yeah,
smash.
Like the best thing about the movie is that I remember Brian specifically, I hadn't seen the movie, and he, you know, he came back from Austin, he came to Indy, and we went to the movie together, and he said, there's one specific scene that I want you to pay attention to, and it's the scene where it's a flawless, flowing shot where they don't break away, and it shows each...
It's not a static shot. It's an unbroken shot that goes from Avenger to Avenger.
Holy shit! It's like I'm flipping through a comic page like really fast.
I don't know how they did that with the amount of special effects that are going on. Like, I've seen like Hitchcock and Carpenter and Orson Welles use the long, you know, unbroken shot, use that really long pan. I've never seen it done in an effects driven movie, because you would think in a movie with that many special effects, you would have to cut away to set up the next. Just so it's not cumbersome to your post-production team. But, man, there is not a seam in that entire shot.
What's so smart about it – I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
No, go ahead.
I didn't have anything to say.
Okay, sorry.
I was just saying
– Elliot, smash.
No. What's so smart about it, the way they put that scene together, you start off by you're following Iron Man And then once he frees up Hawkeye, then you start following the Arrow. And then once you get to the Arrow, you're following Thor and Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already – and you pass by Black Widow while you're on Iron Man. So they use motion that's inherent. It's not like they just sort of plugged it in. It's like, oh, that's really fucking smart.
It's still telling of the movie because now there's not one superhero that's on screen longer for another one. Like, well, that scene was, like, critical. It was like, oh,
And they're all contributing.
Right,
I mean, exactly. It's really – there's three shots, I think, that really emphasize the team dynamic of that film. One is that. The second is the 360 shot, which is incredible. I wish it wasn't in the trailer because it's so good where they're just like going around a complete circle and you see all of them. And of course, the line that like just like filled me with so much glee is when Iron Man says to Captain America, call it.
Yeah.
When he finally like relinquishes a little bit, like he's not so self-absorbed that he can't relinquish control. And I was like, man, that's fucking awesome.
Well, it shows, and Iron Man 3 made Avengers a better movie. Because it showed that there was a lot of character development going on in Iron Man, going on for Iron Man in Avengers,
mm-hmm.
and that for him to get to the point where he actually seized control, he had to figure out that this is bigger than me,
right?
And then the entire point of Iron Man 2 is him saying, "Fuck the government, this is mine."
I really like.
I think you're gonna do it wrong.
I really like Iron Man 3 because it's like for me, it's polar opposites of 2 and 3. It's like
you mean this, 1 and 2.
Well, for me, it's 2 and 3 because
You said 3 is a polar opposite of 2 and 3?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, 2. It's just a polar opposite of 3 is a polar opposite of 2, where, like, you have, like, just a typical, like, superhero movie. I mean, it was all right. And
it wasn't bad.
But... It wasn't bad, but then you have 3 that just takes a lot of risks, and it's, like, a lot of chances, you know? Yeah. And it shows, like, just...
It curses out a kid.
Yeah, like, it just shows the vulnerability of a superhero. Mm-hmm.
That's what you get when you hire Shane Black. I love that. If you just tuned in, we're reviewing The Avengers, which is a film that's actually pretty good. I don't know if people have been telling you about this. It came out 2 years ago, and...
you may have heard of it.
You may have heard
of it. I'm going to steal a point from Brian from 2 years ago when he did it on Leog.
You remember more shit about what I said than I do.
Well,
first of all, that means you're a great listener. And I've
been a good lawyer.
And I have been drinking way too much.
Well, no, I've listened to all the Leogs at least 3 times, and I listened to the remote viewings and most of the couple of cold ones and most of the Let's Do This. Mm-hmm. So, like, I've always been a fan, but I remember you said something back when because you did the rundown of Avengers. You did the first little segment on Leog. And you were talking about how if you have a character that we don't really know that well, because we've seen Black Widow a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Hawkeye, what they did was so smart, and this is me stealing your point, is they made him the villain, so all of a sudden you're rooting for him, and you're invested in his character, because otherwise
you
wouldn't give a shit about
Hawkeye.
They gave
him something interesting to do, and that interesting thing is that they put him on the other side. And I think what they did with Coulson was such a smart thing.
Okay, I love Coulson.
Because we didn't even realize how much we were falling in love with Agent Coulson until he got killed. And then it was like... Oh, that's what they're actually avenging. Because the line that Tony Stark has about if we can't save the Earth, we're damn sure going to avenge it doesn't make any sense to me. What does make sense to me is that what Coulson starts to say as he's dying, which is this is never going to work if they didn't have something to, and the rest of the line was going to be avenge. So,
well, to the point that he's carrying that series right now.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
They
had to bring him back. They were like, oh, no, we need him. He's not actually dead.
Well, he's so affable. Like, and this is so damn nerdy, but like in my professional career – the guy I want to be is Coulson because he's competent and he's nice.
And he's super, like, Clark Gregg in real life, super awesome. He's exactly that awesome.
Like, he's not flamboyant. He just does his job. He has a nice haircut. He has a car he likes a lot. He does his job. He goes home. That's who I want to be.
Yeah. Don't touch Lola.
Have you seen Clark Gregg in his cameo in Sports Night towards the end of Sports Night?
Mm-mm. I don't think I have.
Dude is Coulson everywhere.
Always in everything
he's been. Yeah, he's always Coulson. It's crazy.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much. That's going to do it for this Inside the Locker. I want to remind you once again, we are available on iTunes just like all of our other One of Us content. Just search One of Us in the podcast section. You can also find us on Twitter, either the show at ITLcast or individually. I'm at BryGuySalisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At JCDeLeon1.
That's a long name. Just follow me. Just look up Blake Salisbury. You're going to see it.
I'll put it at the bottom of the page.
And what's Adams again?
It's B Austin Sally 8.
And
Adams is the_beef. And also, if you are looking to buy anything from Amazon, it could be a sports documentary, it could be a new recliner, anything at all, we ask that you please come here first and click on our pick of the week icon right there on the right in the sidebar, because if you get to Amazon through our link, no matter what you buy, we actually get a cut of that purchase, and it benefits the site. And it doesn't cost you anything extra, so please, please consider doing that. We really do appreciate that. Also want to announce that we are going to be doing a Royal Rumble commentary. This is official. Yeah. We're going to be doing with the good folks over at All Rings Considered. And I'm blanking on the date. I believe it's coming up soon, like the 26th or so.
It's usually like the last Sunday of the month is when the pay-per-views are.
Yeah, so I actually think it's happening this Sunday, so I should probably get on making a post for that. But yeah, we'll be doing that commentary with Amanda and John from All Rings Considered, which is probably the best wrestling podcast that you could listen to right now, so definitely check that out. Also want to remind you I guess that's all I wanted to remind you about. So all the reminders are done, but just to give you a heads up on what we're doing, definitely doing a Super Bowl commentary, doing a Royal Rumble commentary with All Rings Considered.
Also, you can catch us, most of us, on the movie reviews that one of us is doing.
Yeah, Highly Suspect reviews is something that's still going strong. We picked the absolute worst month to start doing movie reviews. I guess we technically started in December, but January is notorious for being a dumping ground of just shit that the studios don't care about. And the thing about that is, there aren't a lot of press screenings for these movies because the studios don't even care enough to show it to press because they don't think it's going to go anywhere. So, we've had to see a lot of these movies at midnight, and I, Frankenstein, will be the one that we do that with this week. So
you take that bullet there, sir.
I will fall on that silver bullet, even though that doesn't really kill Frankenstein's monster. Don't worry about it. Just watch Monster Squad. Just watch Monster Squad. Don't worry about it. Yeah, Frankenstein's Monster. It is called I, Frankenstein's Monster.
And I can't believe that it's being made and it's going to suck. So.
So there is that. So for JC, for Blake, for Elliot, this is still Brian Salisbury here at Inside the Locker Sports. It's not just for jocks anymore.